It's Boss Bear Radio, episode something or another, I forget. My name's Griffin Hoffman, and with me this week, through the internet airwaves, is Jeff Brewer.
Well, hello there.
And Axel Anderson.
Present and accounted for.
Hell yeah. Welcome aboard, boys.
Hi. Thank
I've got to deal with this audio here.
Are we on the USS Buttfucker? Welcome aboard, boys.
UNSS. This is the Halo Times.
Field comment brought to you by Jeff Brewer.
Hey, well, it just sounded so, it was welcome aboard. Are we on like the podcast ship or something? I was just wondering what was going on there.
The podcast ship has set sail to Booty Cove.
All right, we need to stop.
Anyway, though. So.
Broadcasting live from Iowa, the most progressive state when it comes to butts.
Nope.
When it comes to fried butter.
Nope. Okay, I'm going to leave that one untouched. Anyway. Hey, guys. We were talking about crying over Last of Us, and we're here to talk about video games for the next 3 hours.
Three only?
Yeah, it's all I got hard drive room for, so yes. Oh my. It's what I trust. And also, who listens to 3 hours?
I thought we agreed that nobody listens to this already.
Well,
so.
True, yeah. But I mean, yeah. No, you're right. You're
total
right.
Creative freedom.
So, both of you finished The Last of Us for the PlayStation 3 home entertainment console platform?
Yes.
Yeah, like a week ago.
Whoa.
Waiting on your slow asses. In all fairness, I did beat the game in 3 sittings.
Axel's a maniac.
You're a monster.
That's so apropos because I was called a monster when I shot a doctor in the face.
Ooh, that's good. True. So do you want to start at the end? I think that's a great idea.
That's what you call a segue.
I'm a master of them.
Which I've just now ruined by pointing it out.
Welcome to podcasting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that ending.
I hate Joel. Is anybody else with me?
Yeah.
Seriously, I hate that guy. Joel.
I hate Joel, but I like the ending. I thought the ending was great.
Yeah.
Nope.
Like, do you feel okay? Let me pick your brain, Jeff. Do you feel great about the ending, or do you feel great because the ending was interesting and unique in and of itself?
I feel great. I feel great that the ending was what it was, even though the ending made me feel bad. But I think the ending was supposed to make me feel bad. And even after the fact, when I went back and revisited it, I kind of developed a more nuanced impression. Like when I first witnessed the ending, I was like, Joel, you're a motherfucker. I hate you. Even if I can completely understand your actions, I hate you. But the whole time I was very happy that it seemed like it was within his character because he is kind of an asshole. He is kind of selfish. And he was screwed up and he had turned this girl into like his surrogate daughter. So I think it fit with his character. It maybe wasn't the ending that I wanted to happen, but it was the ending that I think should have happened, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, no, I get you. It's, yeah, I hear you there.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I would just have liked some say in it. I mean, I know this isn't a linear game. But to be in it 15 hours and then be left with no choice but to doom the human race because of your petty personal shit, I didn't enjoy playing it and I didn't enjoy watching it. And see, I put down the controller like, what the fuck have I been doing for the past 16 hours if this was what was going to happen? I never would have done that.
A callback to last week, Jeff, I know you said that this game reminds you of a JRPG and you kind of led on to something happening late game. And
yes.
After I finished the game, I was like, well, maybe it was this where the situation was taken out of your hand. And it was like a classic JRPG style of like, you're playing a character. You're not playing yourself.
I think that's what it was. Now that I'm kind of actually, it was actually Jamie, who didn't want to go into spoiler territory, but I guess he had some ideas of what specifically was resonating with me. I just sort of had a sentiment back then, but I really do think it's part of it is the sort of linear narrative with characters who have their own motivations. Mm. You're just kind of looking on.
Yes.
You can't really influence the outcome. And I do think I was going to say part of why we all were so angry at the ending is because I think it's really hard to do that in a video game. Because anytime that you hand the character a controller and tell them, like, you can make things happen, like, you can make the shit you want to happen in this game, anytime you can't do that, it's, like, really dissonant for the player.
Sure, I got you. But I also think that's really interesting you say that, because, you know, in finishing this game, it's unlocked this, it's cracked this this fissure in the dam of spoiler information on the internet for me. So I've been reading and listening to all this stuff, and, you know, I hear all these anecdotes about how these people are emotionally touched and how all these people, like, you know, played the game and felt like, oh, I was so out of control, like, it was so uncomfortable for me to play it. And I finished the game, and I was like, well, that's kind of what it's not what I expected in terms of like the straight up, like, I can't say I predicted the ending because I'm stupid, but emotionally,
oh, neither did I, dude.
Yeah, emotionally, it left me feeling just kind of like, you know, numb. Like, I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, like I didn't have that moment of tears, of joy or depression or remorse,
no,
or anything like that. Like, so many people have said, there's so many anecdotes floating around the internet, like, oh, this is such a touching game. And I was like, am I weird for not feeling that way?
I don't think so. And this is why I think, and I think I'm right there with you, Griffin, is that I, for the majority of the game, I was Joel, right? So I was seeing myself as the protagonist of the story. And as soon as Joel makes this decision to murder a whole bunch of well-intentioned soldiers and doctors, I stopped being Joel.
Yeah,
I stopped being invested in that character at the moment when he rips the gun out of the soldier's hand and kills him in cold blood. I mean, I just didn't – I was like, all right, at this point, I'm not with him anymore. This isn't me. Mm-hmm. So I almost reluctantly finished the last few rooms full of ridiculously armored enemies.
Yeah.
And I tried everything in the room with where the surgery was about to take place. I tried everything before I actually pulled my gun out.
Did all of us walk into the doctor and find that he just did nothing?
Yes.
Yeah. I just bounced off him.
And it's funny because in the beginning of the game, if you walk into the police officers, they knock you over.
Right. I had a Spec Ops The Line moment where I got to that point and I was like, the right decision for me is to turn this game off. Like, if you want to, if you want to marry gameplay with story, the best decision is to not let this story unfold.
Can I actually drop in a quick plug for an indie game called
No!
Just really quick, really quick.
No, of course.
It literally explores that exact theme. And I don't want to spoil too much of the game. I think I'm going to have to spoil it.
No, go for it, because I probably won't play it.
Basically, it plays out like this dating sim. And you're given no context. You're like, okay, you're going on your date with Felicia. And you go on your date, and you do something, and Felicia dies. Just every time you do something, Felicia dies. But then you get to start over. And the next time you play, like, you know she's going to die. So you can actually stop it. It plays out like a dating sim with a conversation tree. And when it comes to the point where she's going to die, you can intervene. But she still dies.
Hmm.
And you keep playing the game, and you're kind of like trying to find like a way to save her. And you keep unlocking these additional scenarios and scenes. And then you get to the end of the game. And it's very meta, because like you tell her you're in a video game, you're trying to save her life. And she's like, If you want me to live, I'm probably going to die this time too. So why don't you just turn the game off? Like, that's the only way you can control this story, because I'm going to die otherwise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it very much, I actually was thinking of that as I was trying to turn over and justify the ending of The Last of Us in my head, because like you guys, I stopped identifying with Joel, or rather I stopped being Joel when he started killing all those people, when he started trying to save Ellie, even though he was dooming the human race. But In later days, I started thinking about that game and how, like, if you're going to do a linear game, I don't think you're necessarily robbing the players of choice. It's just
no.
that
Sorry, no, you're ahead. Right. No, you're. I agree. I've been thinking the same things as you've been thinking, Jeff.
Yeah. It's like if you don't want that ending, just turn the game off and make your own. I mean, it's shitty in a way because you want them to give you all the choices in the world, but you know. Right,
and then you want to see the game story to the end.
Yeah, I don't know if the option occurred to me to shut the game off because I'm like, all the while I'm playing it, killing the soldiers, the good guys, murdering the doctors, going through the, you know, running through the fire at the end. I'm like, is this really how it's going to really? I was almost in disbelief. I was because I wanted to keep playing it just because maybe somehow Joel would get his head blown off by a guard and they would take Ellie back and do the right thing. But it didn't happen.
Yeah, and then he lied to her. Oh, knife in the, oh knife my in the God, chest.
Yes.
See, I wasn't crying then. I wanted to ask you a question though, Griffin. Did you feel emotionally disconnected from the game the whole time, or just at the end?
I guess that's a complicated question that I probably won't do justice to an answer to. But I didn't really feel emotionally connected to the game at any point.
Interesting.
Not in the way that I think that most people that through anecdotes did, where the connections were like through the storytelling and through the like the oppressive nature of the world situation and the like horrible apocalyptic situations everybody was in, and like the shit or more shit choices people had to make, like that never really resonated to me. Like that had that kind of like hollow, like, it's a story, blah. Mm. This is a story about story things, and this is dumb. Like, not dumb. Mm. It's just like, it's hollow. Mm. Like, of course it's bad, and it's bad. Like, it's non-interesting. Like, never was it gray and gray enough. It was bad and badder. So that's kind of why. And then also just being like Axel, you said immediately right upon the start, like the disconnect with Joel was immediate. For me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
He goes from hero to murdering bastard in like 2 seconds flat.
But well, I never felt a hero with Joel. Like, there was never ever that feeling of like, oh, he's the hero. Like he just felt like a cipher at best.
Well, I mean, even in the beginning, he was kind of an asshole. I mean, he drove by that family. I mean, you could argue that's what he needed to do to survive, but the game kind of sets him up being an asshole in the very beginning of the game.
Yeah. I mean, but asshole also equals, you know, survivalist. Like, the last of us are not the best of us. Mm-hmm. It's the people who live, and they may not be the best people. No. So, you know, I never had that connection to him and Ellie. Like, I could see it, but it was, again, it was like me looking through a TV, you know, pretty obvious metaphor.
I feel like if that was the case, you probably had a hard time with the game. Maybe, because I feel like it definitely needs to get its hooks into you in order to be effective, because it really got its hooks into me.
Sure.
Big time.
I mean, I was cynical about this game in the beginning, as Jeff can attest to. And I think in the beginning, it doesn't really do a good job of kicking the game off strongly. It's a little slow in the beginning, but the characters did grow on me, and I did begin to feel all the way through even the scenes when you're approaching the hospital, the last place where the story ends effectively. I felt like I was Joel, and I actually felt protective towards Ellie. And those were emotions that I was conscious of while I was playing the game. But there were these two blocks of time in the game, the beginning when it's kind of slow getting going, where I'm like, okay, do I even want to continue with this game as you're, you know, exploring Boston? And then at the end where I'm just like, what the fuck? I hate this.
Okay, I have a question for you. It's always, there's no point in talking about what games could have been or what games should have been, but there at the point when Joel goes down, falls on the rail in the college, and then the next chapter starts up and you're playing as Ellie. Mm-hmm. If that was that to the end of the game, do you think that would have resonated with you differently in a more positive or negative way than how the game ended up panning out?
Do you mean if Joel's?
I mean both.
Joel being impelled was the end of the game?
No. I mean,
no, he means if you had Ellie for the rest of the game.
If that was Jeff, I love the way you phrased that. That's so cute.
What do you mean?
you make it sound like you have her, like you have her as your party member, like she's
she's the main character. She's Cloud. She's Tifa taking over for Cloud.
Yes. Yeah. No. It's only you could say something like that, and it would mean something to me. But yes, I would your perception of the entire story change if the story was no longer the two of them, but just the one, like it was for those few hours?
Well,
and would it change for the better or worse?
Interesting. What do you think, Axel?
I can say that I definitely enjoyed playing as Ellie more than playing as Joel. But I think that was more for gameplay reasons, like mechanics reasons, than actual like my emotional connection to the characters or anything like that.
Is it because you just picked up a goddamn knife and you have to deal with the fucking shivs the entire time?
That was part of it. Yeah, I like how Ellie has an unbreakable knife.
Her knife sucks.
Best will last through two stabs. Yeah,
her quiet kills.
She's horrible at melee though.
Yep.
If you sneak up on guys, you take them down. It might take you a few seconds longer to take them down, but you still do it.
She's
faster on her feet and crouch too.
You can't yoke him up.
Yeah,
makes her better.
I loved playing as Ellie. I thought that was brilliant. I thought the way that the scene, because remember, I was very emotionally invested. Like for me, I really was loving just watching the narrative unfold, watching what was going on with the characters. Like when I saw Joel almost dying and like the scene ended and we had no idea what the hell was happening, I was so like there. I was like, I have to know what happens. And then they were like, no, you have to hunt a deer. And it was so annoying because I was like, okay, I'll just kill this deer. And like, it took me so long to kill that deer. It took me like 30 minutes to kill that deer. And I think it was brilliant. I loved playing as Ellie. I thought that was fantastic.
I think it was a nice touch. I mean, I thought it was a good way to tell that bit of the story. Just, you know, Joel is down for the count. And it's not certain whether or not he will survive. So I guess it's to play as Ellie while she attempts to not only keep Joel alive, but keep herself alive and safe. I think it was a powerful way to tell that bit of the story. But if we had continued through the end of the game, kind of as Joel with the trailing character and Ellie leading the way.
So through the magic of video games, the gameplay and story now is that you are a small Joel. Like through the experiences you've lived as Big Joel, now this person is just a truncated version of Joel, but has to go through the same things, but all alone.
I thought that might have been the case when it started, so I think I could have been okay with that. But I would have been okay with it either way, I think.
Yeah, I think I would have been fine with that. I mean, it would have been a little jarring to never play as Joel again, but I like Joel better as a character.
Is it jarring only because you're had that moment because you're like, fuck, I just spent all this money on my new shotgun or something. And you're like, Ellie doesn't have a freaking whatever.
I misspoke earlier. I meant to say I prefer Ellie as a character.
Oh,
Joel is a douchebag. Ellie is honest.
I was going to say, I thought it was so awesome when they switched to Ellie that I was ready to play as her for the rest of the game. I thought I might have to play as her for the rest of the game.
Me too.
And I feel like because when you get Joel back, the final act with Joel is like his least heroic moment.
Absolutely.
It kind of makes you pine for just playing for Ellie for a little bit. Cause like if she had had the power to make that choice, would she have made it differently? Like,
yes,
probably, because it's pretty it's pretty clear that she's pretty bummed that she couldn't be of use to the cause, and it sounded like she was ready to die. I mean, that whole final act was just hard. I was having a hard time, but not believing it, but just playing.
Giraffes.
The giraffes were awesome. The giraffes.
Really?
Okay.
Were they?
You didn't like the giraffes.
Sell me on the giraffes, because I wasn't. I don't know.
The giraffes.
I can sell you on the giraffes. Okay. So
do it, Axel.
You've just recovered as Joel from a life-threatening injury. Mm-hmm. You fought your way through the clutches of that madman, Nolan North.
Rapey Nolan North. Yeah.
Rapey, stabby Nolan North.
Is there any other way?
Not for Nolan North.
Wait for Saints Row 4.
So much rapey, stabby in that game. I mean,
no, actually, I was Nolan North.
I was a little emotionally drained at that point in the game.
I thought it was over.
Yeah.
Well, I knew we would have to continue on to the research facility. I was expecting that. So
that felt like such a boss fight. Like that was like the end boss fight for me. I was like, oh god, now we just go die in a corner together after all that.
It was a good mini boss.
I wondered if they would just cut it before they got there. That might have been interesting too. Honestly, Griffin, if they cut it before they reached the Fireflies.
Hmm.
But I think the giraffes were like, okay, guys, like you're almost to the end of the game.
Are you guys? So I want to be like really nitpicky here. Like, are you talking about the giraffe proper giraffes? Like the giraffes really giraffe is a weird to keep saying over and over again. But is it the giraffes seeing those giraffes, or is it that whole moment of seeing the giraffes? Because
it's the whole moment.
Okay.
It's the whole moment.
Okay.
It's that the game clearly. It's the game clearly giving you a rest.
Yes.
It's giving you something beautiful to look at, something serene, something restful, which is the biggest juxtaposition with the rest of the game that I can imagine.
Yeah. I agree with Axel. And I have a couple of points on this. So first of all, it's like everything's been shit. And you and Ellie have come to this place where you like really love and care about each other, and you know more shit's about to go down, or like you suspect that more shit's about to go down, and it's just been awful. And then suddenly you see this thing, which is just like unlike anything I've ever seen before. It was so beautifully staged, so serene and peaceful, and kind of weird, and like only
very Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that actually also, like, this scene also reminded me of Japanese games in a sense, because it's like, it doesn't even feel like a Western aesthetic. It was just like, this is such
a
weird
surreal
scene. It was very zen.
Very surreal.
So the thing that I loved about the giraffe scene is, actually, the giraffes were the least interesting part, and that part where you're looking at the giraffes, I just don't give a fuck about. It's from open... The opening of that scene is Ellie staring at some shitty ass cave wall drawing of like a deer against the wall, just staring at the deer. The deer that caused her to get into that whole rapey Nolan North thing, reminding her of that whole situation. And then Joel and her switching characters, like Joel being like, hey, you know, I'll sing to you, or, you know, you don't want to talk about, you know, jokes, and this is Sarah, and you guys would have been, you know, just like talking to her.
Finally opening up, yeah.
Yeah, in a way that he's never done it before. And then you get into this room, and you're like, well, I'm going to fuck around and run around all and collect all this garbage, and you're like, oh, and he's like, all right, we got to get up here. And she's like, huh? You're like, we have to get up here. And she's like, oh, okay. So then you go and you grab the stupid ladder for the 80th goddamn time. You grab the ladder, you put it up for the thing. And this is the moment that was, if there was a moment that was had any sort of emotion to it, it was this totally bizarre moment where you put the ladder up against the wall and Joel looks at the camera, like looks straight into the camera and literally looks lost for a second and is like, what's wrong here? Ellie isn't climbing this stupid thing.
Yeah.
And then
I thought that was a nice touch.
Or sorry, he goes up, there's no ladder. He backs up against the wall and he's like, I'll hoist you up.
Oh yeah.
Like, come here.
When he's gonna boost her and he just stands there.
And he just stands there for literally, you know, a handful of seconds and stares at the camera and he's like, Ellie, hey. And then, you know, it shatters for a second and she's over there, clearly thinking about the previous garbage that she's been through.
Yeah.
And you're like, my God, like, this is fucking the worst. Like, you know, for somebody like me who has been fairly detached to this point, it's like, fuck, like, finally, the gameplay and the emotion catch up with each other. And you're like, God damn, that poor girl has been going through a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the end of that chapter is not her saying, like, you know, he tried to kill me. It's her saying, like, he tried, he was gonna,
yeah.
Never, what was it gonna be? Like, something scarier to her than infection or death. So he finally has that moment of, like, looking at the camera, everything syncs up, and you're like, fuck, this is awful. And you throw up there, She goes up there and she's like, oh my God, Joel, you got to see this. Oh,
she runs away.
Yeah. And you're like, what the hell am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
But it's everything in really short succession of like,
yeah,
something's off. Okay. Yeah. Then the emotions start to flood in. Then you throw up there and then it's like, okay, now something's off in a way that you've never had to experience it before, where it's like, I am completely out of control and something is happening. Like, it's that horrible parenting feeling of like, oh my God, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
So. Well, you are the only parent among us, so you may have a unique perspective on that. I also was going to say, when she says it can't be for nothing, and then she looks at you, I was like, no. Do you remember that?
Oh, the giraffe?
When like, in the car ride?
When he's like, we don't have to do this.
Oh, yeah.
That whole start to finish of that segment for me was just like unbelievable.
That thing where they're driving in there and she's like, it's going to be different this time. Like, it's not going to be like the last time. It can't be for nothing. We've made it this far. And you're like, this is just, you know, this is the third chapter of the story. Like, this is the de-escalation part where, yeah, either it will go really, really happily or it's going to go really, really poorly. Like,
that's a
neutral statement.
I feel like your criticism of it, though, is that it's a story.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. But you know, that's why I'm trying to point out you're right. It is a story, and I may be a little critical, but I'm trying to point out the moments where I feel like the gameplay and the storytelling really sunk up and touched me in a way that, you know, few stories that aren't related to video games can do.
I see. Interesting. I think what you said, Griffin, it sounds a lot like how I was feeling, at least with the boost thing. Like, you really felt the weight of what was going on with her then. And I also wanted to say something that scene actually reminded me of. I was recently playing the Vita Uncharted like a couple weeks ago, and it's not very good. I think it's quite bad, actually. But I had a moment where Nathan Drake went to boost someone and the game froze or locked up because the AI couldn't make its way over to where he was. So it was just him standing there boosting. So for me, I was almost laughing because it was that exact same scene. But it was supposed to carry like emotional weight. I also feel like it was just kind of Naughty Dog making fun of their goofy little animations, like, okay, I'll boost you now.
But it's not making fun of it. It's the fact that you've done this.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if the raft the last time was like, it didn't work, and he's like, well, I should have fucking taught you to swim. I had an entire goddamn year to figure it out, didn't I?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It'd be
yeah.
like a statement like that, you know? It's like, it's not making fun of it. It's
well, it's very
it's
meta.
A realization of the gameplay.
Yeah, it's very meta, I would say.
Well, it's they're doing
it's
something
meta,
that's...
Cause it's not meta, because it's not leaving the storytelling or the gameplay. Like, it's not... going beyond that.
Okay, maybe it's deliberately poking at the fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah. I think what it is it's one of the oldest tricks in art, which is setting up a pattern and then creating an expectation and then defying it. I mean, this goes back to, for anybody who might be listening other than us, I'm a classically trained musician, and that's one of the things that Bach did, and he was famous for.
Bless you.
He sets up a pattern. Yeah, thank you. He sets up a pattern and then it primes your expectation and then takes a left turn.
Oh, dude. Sure.
And I think this is exactly what was going on. I mean, you're going up to this thing. Oh, it's another fucking boost thing. Like, I'm going to boost her up. She's going to drop a ladder down. It's going to be the same goddamn thing we've done 100 times, except you're like, wait, this is taking a little too long. And he's still staring over at where Ellie should be. And then he says, you know, he says something like, Ellie, are you okay? Or whatever. And the camera angle changes. And you're like, oh, that, you know, it's kind of a nice twist on, you know. It was a nice surprise to not have to go through that same shit the same way.
I will say that every time they tried to set up an expectation and then break it, I was always terrified that they were going to break it. Because like every time Ellie crawls into a little vent, I'm like, okay, which time is the zombie going to attack her?
Oh, yeah.
And then it finally did. Right. But
this game, for as many moments as there were where the gameplay and the storytelling really sync up to make a good impact, I think there were just as many that the gameplay was like totally had nothing to do with what was going on in the story. Really? For example, I think Jeff and I, we've talked about this for a little bit, but in the last scene, the hospital scene, Joel is supposed to be.
Hey, before you get into this, I want to let you know this is a safe place, and I think that there is a stigma floating around right now about people saying anything negative about The Last of Us. But go for it. Like, voice your opinion, because I think there is some dissonance between gameplay as well.
Oh, dude. Yeah, there's always a stigma about bad talking. I mean, I got it a little bit with Infinite.
You're wrong. No, it's all good.
No, I was right there with you with Infinite, Jeff.
Yeah, so there's always a stigma about bad talking, but it's perfectly legitimate opinion. It's just an opinion. So yeah. Go ahead, Axel. So I know what he's going
to
say, yeah.
In the last segment, in the hospital, you're supposed to be rushing. Joel is supposed to be running through this hospital as fast as he can to try and stop the operation on Ellie before it happens. Unfortunately, that immediacy doesn't make its way into the gameplay at all. The first room of enemies, which is I guess it's like an ER or whatever, and there are like 15 armored enemies. I took maybe 20 minutes to clear the first room. And I cleared the first room. Everybody was dead by the time I went into the second one.
Wow!
And the second section, I played on hard too. And Jeff,
yeah,
did
you turn off listen mode, Axel? Or
no, I had listen mode on. But anyway, I killed every enemy in that ward and in the connecting hallway leading up to the door to the next zone. So
wait, before you get into the room with the doctors,
yes.
Yeah. Did you kill everybody in that last thing?
I did.
How the hell did you do that?
It took me a lot of tries.
I killed every single enemy in the hospital.
Axel's problem, I actually kind of agree with Axel on this one part of the game, but to me it really was only one part of the game. There's like stupid things in that segment. Like, you know how Naughty Dog had the enemies with helmets in Uncharted where you shot their helmet and then their helmet flew off instead of you getting a headshot? They brought those back in the final rooms of the game. And I think that was ill-advised. But I got around that by using Molotov cocktails and my flamethrower. Right. So for me, I avoided the tonal dissonance, but it definitely was a weakness, I think.
Well, I mean, there are more examples of things that break immersion in the game. But I'm specifically talking about now about the gameplay being dissonant with the story. So the gameplay was dissonant with the story in the final section for the reason that I'm explaining, which is that Joel is supposed to be in a hell of a rush and there's no timer in the gameplay. The gameplay isn't set up such that you have to move through the areas quickly in any other way. I mean, you can basically take your time, clear every single room and move to the end. And whenever you happen to get there, that's when they're about to take the knife to Ellie. And when you transition from one room to the next in the hospital, so I cleared the first room, cleared the adjoining, you know, the little walkway, and then I move into the stairway where you're supposed to go up to the next level. Everybody's dead. I've walked around the entire floor looting all the corpses and taking all the ammo. I've got my assault rifle.
And Joel
runs into the stairway. Out of breath, slams the door closed, barricades.
Yes. Nobody else is in there, right?
I'm like, dude, why are you doing that? There's nobody. You killed them all. They're all dead.
See, I just
checked their lifeless corpses for loot.
I justified that from a narrative perspective by saying, oh, well, maybe more dudes will show up. Even though I knew that they weren't programmed into the game, I was like, okay, well, maybe he thinks more dudes are going to show up. That didn't cause me too much in the way of pause. And I do think that it was a deliberate decision not to put a timer in. Because they could have had a little health bar of Ellie going down.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think you guys are right. Like, I think that Axel, that dissonance of that last bit of like, this is immediate, needs to happen now. But then there's also no immediacy besides the narrative programmed into it. And especially when there's those like audio recordings that you find along the way and you're like, well, I'll just sit here and listen to this 45 seconds of dialogue while this little girl gets her brain slit open.
It was interesting that they brought in what I'm just going to call the voxophones in the very end of the game. And they just weren't there before that. I guess the thing is, unlike in Bioshock, they don't let you listen to them while you run around.
Right.
Which is weird. Stop and read. Like all the other things where notes, which you had to stop and read, that makes perfect sense. But you could probably listen to a Voxophone while you're at
it. How great would it be if you could listen to them while you're running around, but when you went into listen mode, it was just super loud?
I wasn't playing with listen mode, so I
you're
actually
just like, fuck, this is all I can hear.
I actually don't know how listen mode works because I didn't use it. And I think that may have helped me get more immersed.
Sure.
And that may have papered over some problems that you
I wouldn't
had.
Have been able to finish the game without listen mode.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, for the amount of stealthing and stealth taking downing that I did, I felt like I needed listen mode, especially on hard.
I was stealthing and I was on hard. I think I just took it at a snail's pace, and I think that I was just so, for me, I was just so gripped by like the anxiety and the tension. I was like, holy fuck, I'm gonna die if one of these guys bites me. I was so in it, and I totally respect that you guys weren't quite as in it, and I'm disappointed because I want you guys to love the game because I think it does so many things so well in terms of its narrative side. And I also think some of the gameplay choices, like making you wait to switch your weapons and making you like take time to put a bandage on and the crafting system, I think all that stuff is amazing.
Yes.
And I loved it.
Oh, Jeff, don't get me wrong. Like my emotional objectivity to the game does not discredit the quality of the game to me. Like I think it is one of the greatest games created of this generation. Well, it is probably one of the best for the PlayStation 3. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic thing. It is the best story in video games, I think, mm-hmm. that's been told for this generation. Like, yeah. There is so many great merits to this. Like,
yeah,
I cannot.
Awesome lady characters.
Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain?
Shut your mouth. Griffin, I have to show you an amazing video of a Heavy Rain glitch.
I liked Heavy Rain quite a bit, actually. There's some really awesome things about Heavy Rain. Not a lot had to deal with the actual gameplay.
I'm gonna show you a great Heavy Rain glitch of the main character just yelling Sean over and over again.
You mean Jason? So... Jason or Sean?
Sean.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to show it to you. It's really funny. I was going to say it also had Griffin, I totally respect and I think we should continue to nitpick. I wanted to just jump in and say that it has awesome lady characters. I love the lady characters in that game.
Mm. Okay.
I think they're really good. And I
it's better than the men, that's for damn sure.
I think
Joel is one of the best characters ever created in a video game.
Yeah, I think he's a good character too.
I think you can go through a video game and completely, you know, sink your fucking entire being into it for 15 goddamn hours, and then in the last two, be like, shit, I was wrong. This guy is the worst. Like, just to have that flip-flop, and if you are to look back on what you've done and emotionally, like, look back on the experiences you've gone through and be like, wow, like, this was expertly crafted. Like, I was tricked. I was made to believe that this was a good man. And in the end, he isn't a good man, but he's... So this is my one little thing I want to say about Joel at the end of it. And that's, I think that the game is about survival, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that it's more about Joel's survival than anybody else's. Mm-hmm. And the thing that it takes for Joel to survive is Ellie.
Mm.
And there's no way that man could have lived on if it wasn't for this girl.
Yeah.
He has a broken watch, represents his daughter, right? So many corollaries between that.
Yeah.
You know, there is so many illusions of being scared to be alone in the game.
Yeah.
And there's so many parallels of who is the real monster here. And if you think back and you draw a conclusion to all of those things, what kept bringing me to it was, or what kept resurfacing for me was, Joel is a man who is not a good man,
mm-hmm.
but there is this one person, this one thing is keeping him being a good man.
Mm-hmm.
It just,
Well, certainly when she's not around, he's a total asshole. When he tortures those people, it's just brutal.
Well, but even when she is there, like, he's like, you know, these people have I've done this trick before. Like, let me just hit this person with my car. Like, he's not afraid to kind of do that shit when she's around. But yeah, worse when she isn't.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, the story of the survivalism goes beyond just what it takes to stay alive physically. But also mentally, and that is Ellie for Joel.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely was a profoundly selfish decision. It was to serve his own interests. So I agree with you there, Griffin. It was for his own survival.
Yes.
So, very astute.
Can we talk about all the shit that broke immersion during the game? Because that's what I want to bitch about.
Okay,
right now.
Hit us with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's talk about
Do you have
AI.
Any glitches, too, while we're on this same sort of, like,
I had not.
Yeah, sure. Graphical artifacting all over the place.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think this game, I mean, I have a revision PS3, not a fat one, not a brand new one, the one in the middle. I don't know if that makes a difference.
The slim? Mm-hmm.
Slim, I guess. Yes. And I don't know if that has anything to do with why I might have experienced some graphical artifacts or not, but I definitely did. That's not really. I mean,
yeah,
that happens.
I had a little bit of flicker, but it is a very. It is the best thing that's ever been coaxed out of the PS3 hardware.
It's
so
a gorgeous game.
There are some rough patches for sure.
I mean, I usually like to go into detail about technical stuff, and usually I tear console games apart as far as graphics go. But this one was very well done. I mean, recognizing the limitations of the hardware. The light and shadow in this game look incredible.
So good.
The
perfect example is when you're attacking / sneaking up to the front of the bridge when you have – I can't remember the name of the two black kids with you.
Sam and Henry, I think.
Okay. So, yeah, those two guys. When you have those guys with you and you're kind of attacking the bandits bridge and they have that spotlight trained on you and you're sneaking through the shadows in the night, it's perfect. I mean – The shadows are so deep black and the areas in the spotlight are so oversaturated.
Yeah.
Really, 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 really well done. And the faces are incredible.
That flashlight. I think we did great with the flashlight.
But, I mean, the game does have its fair share of just technical stuff that takes you, that reminds you, oh yeah, I'm playing a video game.
It has.
And the most ubiquitous, I think, is the behavior of your AI allies.
Yes. This was a problem in Infinite as well, but they run in front of dudes all the time. It just breaks cover and get called out on it at all.
At best, the AI behavior is immersion breaking when it goes wrong, and at worst, it causes you, for lack of a better term, a game over.
Okay. I wouldn't go that far, but I guess you had a worse experience than I did.
Yeah.
Well, the scene that I'm thinking of is when you're with Bill. After you find out that the car you're hoping to repair doesn't have a battery anymore, you have to work your way through the school. There's like the lobby of the school that has a staircase in it and a bunch of lockers. Every time my save would reload, Bill would walk directly into a clicker.
That's the only way. Yeah,
the clicker would aggro. Every other clicker on the floor would aggro, and it would be a firefight immediately. And it just got to the point where I had the shotgun, I guess, at the time. Every single shell in my shotgun was a headshot, was the only way I could clear that particular scene, because every time I died, it would go back to us creeping down the hallway and Bill running directly into a clicker.
I had that happen to me once in the entire game, and that was when I was going through the clicker garden and Bill ran into a clicker and then I got eaten by a clicker. But I didn't really care that much. But how did you feel about it, Griffin?
I had no such issues. Like I told you guys before, last time or the time before that, where my only weird spots were, I'd be in cover. Ellie would come around a corner and there'd be a guy right there, and she'd run into him for a while and then stab him in the leg, and then it would start off some weird cacophony of fights. But then I'd restart and I would take a different route or wait a few seconds longer here and there, and it's fine.
Yeah,
but I never had any game breaking. Things like that.
Well, even so, I mean, we're talking about breaking immersion, and that seems to be like, I have to take a different path to allow for the movements, the program movements of my AI partner. I mean, that's got to remind you're playing a video game.
I guess so. I only had that problem once, and I kind of thought it was hilarious. When it was annoying because sometimes I'd be stealthing hard, and I'd be like, holy fuck, and I'd hear these noises, like loud footsteps, and it was just like Bill.
Right, and for me, it made total sense. Like, Ellie would come around, I'd be hiding right down a doorway, Ellie would run through the doorway, be standing there, jogging in place against this mercenary, and then all of a sudden it's like, ah, fuck you, and then just stab him in the shin. And I'm like, well, that does not break the immersion one bit, because that probably is what exactly happened several times in those scenes I didn't see.
I love the time skips, by the way. I think the time skips are great. They were deftly executed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were well placed.
Besides that, is there anything else, Axel, that really took you out of the experience?
Yeah, there are a couple of other things. Do you recall the scene where they're scaling the dam heading towards Joel's brother?
I do.
And you have to move the two locks into their upward position so you can kind of walk across the thing and get to the other side of the river. So at that point in the game, I had closed the first lock, which is obvious. You can do it right there. It's easy. And then I couldn't figure out for the life of me how to do the other one. And I'm standing on the bank of this raging river that's, you know, pouring through an electric dam. And I'm looking around. I try going down the dam. I can't get across that way. I try going back up. And I can't figure it out. And then the game goes, hey, look under the water. There's a thing. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm supposed to dive into the raging river? And so I'm like, all right, you know what? If I die jumping into this, you know, the raging river, fine. I'll start over again. I jump in and Joel just like treads water in place while the white caps fly by him at 30 miles an hour.
There's
no problem at all swimming against like a 30 knot current.
Well, I think that speaks to a larger issue, Axel, which I think it's really infrequently touched upon, is that fuck all the water puzzles in this game, honestly. Like the first one was like, fuck, really? A water thing? Like, what kind of things are going to be in the water? Like, the land is the worst, but now the water is always even worser. So you get in there, and you're like, well, this is just, like, it's not bad to navigate, like the controls make total sense, it's simple, and then after you do it a couple times you're like, the puzzles are short, they're totally fine, like it's good design. But then after like the seventh one you're like, fucking water puzzle once again. Zelda called and wants its garbage back.
For me, there weren't that many for me, but I guess water is never good in a video game.
No,
I feel like
never.
I will say something that was,
but
that
it was never, it was never bad.
Yeah, it was never horrible. I was going to say something that was immersion breaking in this game and is immersion breaking in pretty much any third person shooter was the cover points. And that's something I'm not gonna really hammer on it too much, because again, it didn't ruin the experience for me, and this is a problem in every game. But can we do something about waist high coverage just being everywhere,
or in fucking bricks and bottles in every combat area? where you go into a new location, and you're like, there's a brick and a bottle right here, right at the beginning, and then you walk past them, you're like, wait,
are there
nothing
here?
Triggered? But there's still a brick and a bottle right over here. So either. Either I go forward and something happens and I gotta run back, or I'm gonna have to go all the way back through this shit.
Exactly. Yeah. There was a lot of boasting.
Some telling bits of like game design, and then you're like, you're crawling around these like coffee shops and you're like, well, I'm all out of bricks and bottles, but there's an espresso machine with a gajillion fucking bottles sitting on it.
Yeah, they should have.
I'm good on bricks and bottles.
They should have.
I got plenty of those.
They should have distributed the bricks and bottles more judiciously to keep people guessing.
Sure.
But I did like that there was downtime. There was like a lot of downtime.
Oh yeah,
I love that.
I do too.
To me, that was very unique. And I thought they really nailed it on the level of exploration that is appropriate for a linear game.
Yes.
Which is something that's hard to do. Sometimes you're a hallway. Which is like Final Fantasy 13. That's terrible. And sometimes, like, you just have way too many branching paths with nothing to show for them. And like, if you explored in the game, like, you'd get like a conversation, or like, you'd get it. Wouldn't it's not something essential, but it really fleshed out the world a little bit.
Right.
Or
it's a sentence or a comment here and
exactly.
there while you're looking at something.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things that I was most amazed with was when listening to these spoiler things after the fact, I thought I spent quite a bit of time having finished the game in 18 and change hours. I thought that I really, really dug into all the nooks and crannies, but having, you know, heard what other people discovered and the pieces they put together and the side stories that existed in this world that I was just oblivious to. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fucking brilliant game design. Like I said, this is Mastercraft storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's more than anything. Like, I will admit that this is like one of my top games ever, but even if it wasn't, it excites me for next gen a lot. Yeah. In a way that a lot of other games have just not at all. So if this is what we are getting now, I'm like so excited for what we're going to get soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Battlefield 4.
I'm gonna come to New Jersey and smack
Call of Duty cares, dog ghosts. Hey, we're back. Everything sounds good. Jeff, Axel, Griff, we're all here. Sorry about the little delay there.
Okay, baby.
So as I was saying, God.
So sorry.
I think the zombie / post-apocalyptic genre is a really valuable one, and one that can do things that maybe other genres don't do so well. For example, when society goes to shit and there are no longer punishments for things that would be illegal today, what kind of person are you actually? And I think it allows for a lot of social commentary on human nature, because inevitably when shit hits the fan in these zombie / post-apocalyptic stories, some people act, you know, in the greater interest of humanity. Some people are only interested in their group and their family or whatever, the people closest to them. And other people just turn into murdering, thieving bastards. So I think all of those things are true of The Last of Us. I mean, there are definitely people, the Fireflies are working to cure the cordyceps. Joel is primarily concerned with him and his. And there are the hunters who are primarily concerned with killing you for your granola bars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say one thing that making it a zombie game or the zombie genre does that serves video games well is it finally provides a justification for killing a lot of people. Which, this is one of the few games I've played, you know, I hate to trot out ludonarrative dissonance and sound like a freaking games journalist, but it's one of the few games I've played where I felt okay. I didn't feel like it was ridiculous that I was just killing a lot of dudes.
Hmm.
So that's useful in a sense.
I mean, you do kill a lot of dudes besides. I mean, like, you come across people whose intentions you're not entirely sure of. You know, I'm thinking of there's one part where you go through a library where there are like overturned bookshelves. Mm-hmm. And it's like an old, I guess, a checkpoint or a I forget what they call those places, like a checkpoint set up by the military that's been overrun by the citizens. And it's not entirely clear that these guys are bad in any way. I mean, they'll shoot you on sight, so I guess you kind of have to kill them in order to get through. But I don't know that these guys are – they're not hunters. They're just citizens who have risen up.
Well, I would say –
you kill them anyway.
I would say, like, compared to Naughty Dog's last work, Uncharted.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think that, to me, it in that way, it was sort of well-worn territory. Like, okay, you're killing dudes. And again, this is sort of one of those things where it's like it is very much beholden to its genre in some ways. But in other ways, it's like transcendent. So like, yeah, you're killing a lot of dudes like you do in every video game. But it actually had a reason for it. Like it felt – for once, I didn't feel bad about that. I didn't feel like it was weird or totally dissonant. And it also, to me, kind of highlights the fact that we really do need more than just – games about killing people.
I also, it's funny you bring that up because I two things. I know in the past, actually in the old podcasts, I distinctly recall me getting shit about really enjoying the narratives of Uncharted 1 and 2 from you guys. And like, being like, well, just fucking let it go. It's about having a good time and shooting dudes. But not to bring that up right now. I mean, in any more depth than that. Like, I think the interesting part is what you're saying. Like,
that was me.
Yeah,
that sounds like Axel.
No, it's son of a bitch. Now I just forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry.
No, it's a ludonarrative dissonance or something. I don't even know.
It sounded like you were saying. You were reacting to me saying that we need more games about maybe not just shooting people in the face.
What?
What was it?
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I think that it reminds me a lot of playing Half-Life 2. When you would go from location to location, they're like, Gordon Freeman, you're the great physicist and scientist, genius, human savant, mastermind. And you're like, I fucking put some bricks in a basket and I lift this fucking bridge up. Okay? Really? I'm the only person in this world that can do this fucking garbage? Like,
you are
seriously.
The Isaac Newton of a Half-Life world.
Yes. Yeah. You're Isaac Newton, Galileo Galilei, fucking Einstein of the entire universe. I felt like that was conveyed extremely well in The Last of Us, where by the midpoint to, or I should say by the two-thirds point to the end of the game, you know, you got that feeling of like that sort of like legend, that mythological, this doesn't exist in real life sort of thing that was happening, where people were saying like, well, he killed an entire facility. Like, he took out an entire guard. Like, you know, and you're doing that, and you're like, it's not that hard, dude. And that's because it also worked well, because they're just, like, fucking bumbling along this road, like, 15 freaking meters apart, you know. And you're like, yeah, of course I'm going to yoke you all up and kill you one by one and then, you know, bury you under these cars, you know. But I also feel like, as that went on, it got more prolific and it felt more justified, as it doesn't usually feel in games like in Half-Life, where you're like, really? I'm this super freaking science man genius and all I did was, you know, step on this goddamn lever.
I also thought that the fact that you did that and the game sort of forced you to reflect upon that when they took away control of Joel was really interesting, because it's Nolan North who's like, I heard, like, well, they start, you hear rumblings of before then, but it really sunk in with Nolan North. He's like, I heard this crazy guy was killing all these people. Thing is, he's traveling with a little girl, and like, you're Ellie hearing that, and it's sort of like, it's almost like Ellie is without Joel for the first time, but you're without Joel for the first time, mm-hmm. and you're like, wow, I'm a crazy asshole. That's like when you first start to doubt Joel's character.
Yes,
so that
absolutely.
Was really cool.
Well, it was specifically because Nolan North's character says, "I sent a few men into the town for supplies, and none of them came back alive."
Well, he gives you that really eloquent speech about, you know, everything happening for a reason.
Oh my God!
You know, it's a hard winter, and he loses a lot of men, and this is why, because it's crazy guy. So it was all very well fabricated. In that side of it, just that whole bit of that moment and that sort of story beat in that game of like, fuck, this is a video game, but you're controlling it, but also, it is reacting to you in a way that most games don't really react.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what if you're playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time 4?
Oh, I fucking love that game.
And, you know,
which is a much better game.
Yeah, and there's like a news report on TV and like Abraham O'Neill is interviewing a foot soldier and he's like, out of these fucking turtles just murdered thousands of us. They eat our pizzas. We are our super friends. The Rat King is dead. You know, he's like, oh man, like, we were just hanging out in this room and this fucking dude with swords cut that fire hydrant off and it hit Joey in the gut and now he's bleeding out everywhere.
And now Shredder's gone and I think I'm going to have to move in with my mom again and get a job at the pizza joint.
Now we're going a little Venture Brothers, Axel.
Oh yeah, you're right.
But I love that, so that's great. Yeah, that was really cool. I thought that definitely I did feel justified killing a lot of dudes, and it was really interesting, like I said, how the moment you lose control of Joel is the moment you start to doubt his integrity in killing all those dudes. So that was cool.
Yeah. I just anyway. Now, okay, so as my final thought and bit of exposition we can have here about The Last of Us, and if you want to go more, that's fine. I don't want to, you know, be some totalitarian podcast ruler, but I want to explore a little bit between this and Infinite, BioShock Infinite, you know, and between its storytelling. There's obvious parallels with the main character and its female analog, and you know,
also looking through drawers, lots of drawers.
How many hot dogs were in The Last of Us? Not enough.
Clearly an oversight.
So I don't know. Is there anything? Do you guys want to take the stage for like 5 minutes? I'll time you, and you can talk your feelings on this game versus Infinite. Is that an okay thing we can do?
Sure.
I think that'll be kind of interesting.
That's an interesting question. Yeah, well, I mean, start it off, Axel.
Yeah, from my perspective, as I'm probably more of a technical gamer than most, the differences between the two are vast from my perspective, because one is a shooter. I mean, BioShock Infinite is a first-person shooter, and it kind of plays out that way. But this game, The Last of Us, is more of a. It's not even a third-person shooter. It's a third-person survival horror action adventure game. It's much less of a point-and-click, you know, click on enemies' heads kind of shooter. I mean, the similarities are kind of obvious in that you're playing a male character who has a checkered past, who's leading a naive young girl through trials and tribulations. And you've got to look through a lot of drawers for random shit. And half of the storytelling is done. Well, I shouldn't say half, but in the case of BioShock, a lot of this, not even just the color narrative, but a lot of the details of the main narrative are given in optional extras in the Voxaphones. But I would say that The Last of Us does a much better job of keeping the main story beats in the main story and not in optional notes and things. It's much more when you go off the beaten path and find, you know, a handwritten note somewhere in The Last of Us, it's much more of color, you know, sort of giving a little bit of history of what happened before shit hit the fan in that area or something like that. I mean, one of the criticisms I had of BioShock was that too much of the actual narrative took place in optional voice recordings. But The Last of Us, I think, does a better job with that, even though you are still digging. Like, you have to go in every room. I don't know if you felt the same way, Jeff, but on hard mode, I felt like if I could explore another room, even if it cost me a bullet or two killing a zombie to get there, I wanted to get there because who knows if there's a shiv door there and behind it there's a bunch of shit. You know, like, I couldn't afford not to explore every little last nook and cranny. Whereas with Infinite, it was just, you know, I had full ammo all the time, and it was just more trying to find the narrative stuff there.
Here's what I would say about Infinite versus The Last of Us.
Do you want to pass the ball?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
So what I would say about Infinite, areas where Infinite and The Last of Us both did well, I think, was in establishing the relationship between the main characters. That was one thing that I really enjoyed about Infinite. I like the relationship between Booker and Elizabeth a lot. And I did think that there were problems with kind of a lot of the stuff around it, though. I really love the intro of Infinite. I loved getting to Columbia, looking at Columbia, being in the first part of Columbia. When they kind of lost me was when suddenly you get that ball and you go up and they see the mark on your hand and they're like, he's a traitor. And then suddenly you put a hook through a guy's face and it's really jarring and you're like, oh my God, I just killed that guy. That's really heavy. That's really deep. Okay. I'm still there. But then the rest of the game is just a hallway of death. And I felt like I was really engaging with Columbia, with like the locale and all the crazy stuff. But then it kind of, after that, it sort of felt like Columbia just became like a window dressing. So I was, it was just sort of like, oh, well, that looks pretty, you know, why don't I move to the next attraction? Or why don't I, you know, like, it just, like, I felt like there wasn't a big connection for me between the narrative and the world, for one thing. I also felt like they made some kind of weird decisions, like making the I can't even remember the name, basically the slave group, making the slave group, putting the slave group on the Vox Populi on the level with the rulers of Colombia, and then when you switch worlds, they just flip flopped the enemies. that whole, it felt like it wasn't handled as deftly. It felt like the themes and the messages it was trying to convey were just kind of more amateurish, like, oh, well, maybe the oppressed, you know, become the oppressors when, you know, if you just tweak a few things. But it was like, am I really seeing, like, this woman whom I've heard portrayed very sympathetically, Daisy Fitzroy, in her voxophones, like, suddenly become this cold-blooded killer whom I'm supposed to hate just as much as I hated Comstock? Like, that for me was really hard to get behind. And I just had a hard time with it feeling very like shooting gallery, wave-based shooter. Like, I just felt like I'd go into a room and it'd be like, okay, you have to kill 20 guys before you can leave. And that was true in The Last of Us as well, but I guess I felt more connected to my killing there. So to trot out the stupid ludonarrative dissonance thing again, it was just like when I didn't understand why everyone in Colombia in every room just wanted to kill me, or anyone who didn't want to kill me just vanished immediately. So that
was behind glass.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I still liked Bioshock Infinite, and I love the setting. I do wish that the setting felt, remember how I said that Last of Us struck a good balance between linear and exploration? I felt like Bioshock Infinite hewed a little much towards linear. And I think it would have benefited from just a little bit more openness. They finally gave it to you at the end of the game, which I was happy about, for the kind of exploration area before you fight Elizabeth's mom ghost or whatever. And I like that. But for everything leading up to it, it just, there wasn't much. And it's weird because it was like a 10-hour game and The Last of Us is like a 20-hour game. And Bioshock Infinite still feels like it took longer, which doesn't really make sense to me. So
yeah, I think Bioshock could drag on in certain places. Just like, oh, really? Another hallway full of enemies? Okay.
Can I go?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, so Jeff, that puts you at, 4 minutes here. Okay, starting now. Ready to go. You guys timing. I got 5 minutes, so...
Just take as long as you need, dude. Go ahead.
I don't want to.
Okay, 5 minutes.
And okay, so... In car rides, I've been turning this over in my mind and trying to explain it to myself. And here's kind of my one bottle of wine, two cans of beer thoughts on this whole situation. Mm-hmm. So, I believe that The Last of Us has some has a lot of extremely high points to it, and I think that the thing that appeals to me about The Last of Us is its design, and its design starts with how do we make a great game. We make a great game by making great gameplay, and then we add great storytelling to that gameplay. So we say, okay, so we make fantastic enemy design in the form of dynamic AI, in the form of two enemy types that are vastly different, that have a diversity of characters within each type that behave so differently that you feel almost as if it's a different game playing out while you're encountering each of these different factions. And then I also feel like that's combined with fantastic storytelling where from the start, you know, there was a story that wanted to be told about Joel and Ellie, from start to finish. It may not be the story that everybody wanted to hear, but by the end of it, it's done. Mm-hmm. It's a story that may not be interactive, may not require a ton of retrospection, but it's something that by the end of it, you're like, well, that was a journey I went on. And I feel good about it in a weird way, or bad about it in a good way too, or a bad way. Like, it's like, this is done and this is what happened. This is what happens. This is how I reflect on it. You know? Now to contrast that against BioShock Infinite, I feel like what happened there was, there was already a pre-existing story or a pre-existing game design and pre-existing storytelling in place. But the team wanted to make a point about or wanted to tell a story that went beyond the gameplay and the storytelling. So they crafted this game, they crafted this story in a way that they knew that was fun in a really base level.
You mean like COD, basically?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. In a base level where it's like, it's awesome
don't
to get
bad
upgrades.
And,
no, I'm not. Because
No.
There is something really carnally enjoyable about shooting dudes in the heads and electrifying pools of water and killing guys and upgrading stats. Like, there's nothing that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, there is something that is brilliant about that design. And they seized hold of that. But in taking that genre or that trope or that schematic, and then by the end of it turning it into something else, and forcing thought in or injecting thought into that whole process, where by the end of it you're like, well, let me, everything kind of is turned on its head. Like, and if you contrast it against the first BioShock, you know, it's like that change happened, or that switch happened really early on, and this one happens extremely late game. So what I'm trying to say is, I feel like BioShock Infinite does a great job of telling a story based on current tropes of video game design. I think that The Last of Us tells a fantastic story and pushes video game design into a new direction.
Interesting.
However, I believe that BioShock Infinite has a more interesting story in a meta game design way. Like, at the end of BioShock Infinite, I feel like, me being a video game player, I want to look at games differently, and I want to look at the medium differently than if I were just like, had never played. Like that has opened my mind up to how I should look at storytelling in video games versus The Last of Us. I finished that game and I was like, damn, that was a great story. And I feel like this has created a revolutionary way of designing games. So the difference is, BioShock Infinite, fantastic, pushing meta discussions on how game design correlates to gameplay and, you know, an author to a story, versus The Last of Us, I think, is a fantastic story overall. However, it doesn't do much in terms of like a meta storytelling.
One thing I will say really quick, just in reaction to that, it's a very interesting idea. I would say I think you're definitely right that Infinite wanted to be kind of meta about game design in general, but I'm not sure what it was trying to say about game design. Like, I guess it was packaged up in sort of this base thing, like you said, and then it was like, okay, well, maybe this is bad, or maybe this is weird. Like, so where do we go from there? Like, yeah, it was thought provoking, but it didn't really take me anywhere.
Yes. No, thank you for saying that. Like,
can I
The
stop
Last
you guys
of Us takes us somewhere.
Jamie wants to hop in.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead, Griffin.
I was going to say, The Last of Us, you're right. Like, thank you for helping me along that path. The Last of Us takes us somewhere into a new direction, but it doesn't expand our horizons. Whereas I think that you know, BioShock Infinite is, opens things up in the way that we look at things, but it doesn't really take us forward. You know, it's like looking, it's a better look back, whereas The Last of Us is a better look forward.
That's an interesting point, Griffin.
In your mind, Griffin, what is revolutionary about The Last of Us? Because I see a fantastic game that plays on a number of things that have been done not quite as effectively in other games. But what in your mind is the real revolution with The Last of Us?
The alchemic, you know, combination of all that, where it's like, hey, It's the Uncharted gameplay combined with the Splinter Cell sneaking, combined with the storytelling that has been, you know, that's been touched upon in a couple of games, but never fully realized because usually the gameplay is kind of garbagey. You know, it's so many little pieces that make such a bigger thing amazing.
It's having to wait like 2.5 seconds to switch your weapon because it serves the narrative.
Sure.
But it also serves the gameplay.
Yes. Yeah. No, Jeff, it's serving narrative and gameplay in the same action, which is so rarely done in games.
Okay. Yes. So I just wanted to understand you because I was thinking something different when you said revolutionary, but I get your meaning when you say that it's an artful combination of a lot of things that have been done well in other genres, but never combined into one game.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. On that note, I'm actually going to just throw Jamie into the call if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah.
Okay, here he comes.
Good.
Ah, what's that?
What's up?
What's that?
Griffin, your Skype picture is incredible.
Oh, thank you. You told me to change it last time, so I did for you.
You no longer have a dog, but you purchased a human?
I got a Japanese human? Pizza application on my iPhone.
Oh, God. You can't get Pizza Hut in Japan because there's no Xbox.
That's right. Trying to explain Hatsune Miku to anybody is like trying to sell a non-gamer on The Last of Us.
Jamie knows who it is, though.
Drops
the
mic. Hashtag drops the mic.
Hold on. Shannon's literally arranging different fans at my face, and then I keep waving her off like, no, I don't need another fan at my face. And she's like, no, try this one and this angle at your face. Like, no thanks.
Jamie, are you familiar with Vocaloid? Are you familiar with the anime girl that they turn into a hologram and she sings the songs that aren't really songs? That's
her. Is that her?
Yes.
Oh, how are they not really songs?
Because they're made by computers.
Yeah, yeah, people type
them in. Which makes them not real.
But
they're not human songs.
Yeah, they're not composed.
Well, they are composed. Just
they're
not
by
her.
It's weird, dude. It's some Genki Rocket shit, like fucking holograms dancing on stage.
It's Tupac Shakur performing.
That's
at
right.
Coachella or whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder how much it costs. How much would a ticket be to that concert? Probably $300.
To the Hatsune Miku concert?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you guys see that new pornography between Tupac and Hatsune Miku? I hear that's beating up that Farrah Teen Mom thing.
That's
which,
this is all
which
going.
Which one? The one where they're in the... what are you talking about?
Can we spend the rest of the episode talking about the Teen Mom sex tape? I have a lot
don't
of
Don't you see where this
it.
Is going, though? This is where this is going. The future of music is just you making a hologram of whatever person you want having, and then they have sex with another hologram. That's music. That's
beautiful.
Like, I want to see
the future of art.
See yeah. John Lennon having sex with
Michael
Bublé. I don't know. Exactly, and then it happens.
I think that's the future of video games as well. Honestly,
absolutely.
I want to have Joel have sex with
a clicker,
Lightning from X3.
No.
So, Jamie, we just talked an hour and 15 about The Last of Us nonsense. So, the stage is yours.
I have no. Axel and I already had a conversation about it via text, which was me being a crab, a giant crab.
Jamie was super cranky today. For some reason.
I was super cranky on the ride home. I was like, I'm not interested in discussing this.
Jamie doesn't want to. Be too critical of it right now because he's afraid it'll make him sad.
So here is an open stage for you. Like anything that you want to react to, anything that anybody has said that you are like, that's I disagree. Like Here is your moment. Here is your stage. Go, please. Nobody will interrupt you, and you just you go. You go, kid. You go, girl.
I'd say my favorite part of the whole game is just different Ellie outfits, and I think that really brings everything together. Like the fact that
my gear is everywhere.
Outfits, and then you can play as her in different outfits. I feel like that's really, like, that's where the story wants us to all go together as a nation in these United States.
As a people.
That's where we should be. I mean, like, that's the point of a really endearing story, right? Is that later you can take the character and dress them up any way you want.
I think that's the memo that Square Enix got from it.
Oh, okay.
Because that's literally what Lightning Returns is. Let's play dress up Lightning.
No, I read. I think Polygon gave it a 7.5, which.
Really?
So I read the review and there's lots of criticisms in there. I don't disagree with any of them. I just think it's awesome. So Axel, I'd be interested to hear your criticisms.
Well, you'll have to rewind this episode and listen to them.
Okay, I'll rewind the episode.
Oh,
I'll listen.
Okay, so me being nice and saying
like a high level.
No. You talk about what you want to talk about, Jamie, because we've already spent an hour freaking talking about this stuff. So,
Well, I guess you covered the ending. I'll say that I like the ending, and I'll just say why real quick. You probably already did this, but I'll just say that it wasn't really emotional for me either. Like, it wasn't an emotional ending. I wasn't like, oh man, I'm so emotional. Like I was at the ending of the first season of the OC, where I cry. I cried at the last episode of the OC when Seth goes away in his little sailboat that he created himself. I did cry. I didn't cry at the end of this.
Dad cry?
My dad cried. But my dad is just my dad cries at lots of things, including usually seeing me, just in general, just anywhere he cries. But I liked the ending. I liked it because it's different. Basically, that's it in a nutshell. Mm. Like, yeah, I could try to talk more like high-mindedly about it, but that's really what it boils down to. I like it because it's different. I like it because you play a villain, and at least I had conflicted feelings about him as a villain.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if he's a complete villain. And that's really why, like, I could talk at more length, but I feel like that pretty much sums it up. So that's my personal take on it. Mm. I completely understand if people don't like the fact that they were almost like tricked into playing a villain, but I actually think that's what's cool about it. So that's my take.
Fascinating.
We can move on.
I think Jamie, that's great. Like, late game spoilers. That's a really really fantastic summary of everything we kind of talked about. Go back and listen, listeners.
I will.
to what we talked about for the first hour.
And that'll be one person listening to this podcast.
That's
just,
right.
They're just going to get here and just rewind over and over again.
Yeah. Stuck in the Mobius loop of podcasting hell.
I played the best video game ever today for 9 hours. It was emotional. There were ups and downs. There's infinite content forever. And that video game is called Google Play Music. The best video game ever. I'm not even joking. I'm quite serious. This is like the best computer thing that has happened to me in like a decade. Is this Google Play Music is the best. Everyone should get it. Everyone should pay the $10 a month. It is incredible. It's like Pandora, but so much better.
What else happened when you were 16?
Oh.
What? Just a lot of marijuana. A lot of it. A lot of marijuana and a lot of marijuana
and a lot of mulana.
Lava mulana is a great game.
I know.
The Blue Lagoon. Lacuna Coil. Is that a band? I don't know.
Laguna Beach.
Speaking of OC.
I did cry at the end.
You've
of
come
OC.
Full circle. Podcast.
Speaking
over.
Of Laguna, I played Dark Cloud 2.
Speaking also of Laguna, FF8.
Yeah.
When did you play Dark Cloud 2?
I've been playing it since I finished The Last of Us. Actually.
Oh my awesome. God! Is that the cel shaded one? That's like it.
Hella
cel shaded.
Yep.
What?
Hella cel shaded. Oh.
Yeah, like really. I remember they were like, this game's cel shaded, and it was like not cliche.
No, it was like, they're like, everything's cel shaded. Just everything, even the items. And I was like, you would change the items and everything's still cel shaded. And actually, at the time, like in 2003, you're like, fuck, really?
Do you guys remember when Zelda was cel shaded and people were actually mad about it?
No, because I wasn't playing that Zelda.
Were you mad about it?
No, just I didn't have a GameCube.
Oh, okay.
Is Dark Cloud 2 existentially boring like the first one?
No.
I love the first one.
Good question. Good question, though.
I've never played Dark Cloud in any form. Can you guys tell me what it's about?
Don't. It's horrible.
It's a launch game, so temper your expectations.
Okay. It's level 5, right?
Yes.
Temper them up into the stratosphere.
I'm tempering my expectations even more now.
Yeah, the launch game of Dark Cloud was kind of garbagey. Like, it was like pseudo roguelike where you would jump into a dungeon that was randomly generated. You'd collect a bunch of nonsense in it, and then you'd leave, and you'd like do this, like, was it Illusion of Gaia or Alundra? Like, build this town, and then
SimCity.
Legend of Mana.
Sure. Yeah. Whatever your SNES go to is reference
that's,
point.
That's PlayStation. It's when you put the pieces in random places, right?
Well, it's more, you have more control. So it's like, you actually have like a 3D map. You can place the things wherever you want, and the way that you place them changes the way that the town works and like the way that you
that's,
interact.
That's
with the
exactly
town.
How right. Legend of Mana works.
Okay.
Sure. So So depending on how you design your town, the more perks you get from it.
That sounds awesome.
And then you repeat and rinse forever in Dark Cloud. Mm-hmm. But then in Dark Cloud 2, they introduce a bunch of amazingly more fun systems like inventions, a billion different currencies, multiple characters. Like it ends up, you know, in the first, I'm in 6 hours, and like the first 3 hours, you're like, fuck, so deep.
This would be a great game for me to start tomorrow, 2 days before I leave the country for a month.
Yes. Nope.
Yeah. I was going to say it's a great July game because nothing is happening in July.
No. It'll be my August, maybe.
It's really good. Well, and I remember, Griffin, good music. Am I misremembering?
Funny you say that. I've been trying to turn that over in my head and be like, is it good or is it not good? Because it changes so quickly. Like, I'll start getting into a song and then it's out of it. And I'm like, well, was it actually good or am I just stupid? And you know, so I think I got to sit down with some time and take some time and listen to some songs of it. But I guess if it's baiting me like that, then there must be some decent parts of it. But I think more of it, it's the design, the world design, and the multiple layers of gameplay that kind of didn't really exist before.
Yeah.
That. Also, loading
Jeff,
hell of good, like a PS2, no loading.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I will say,
I remember that.
I have an important point about it. IGN gave it a 9.0, but the user reviews only think it's an 8.9. So I don't really know how this affects my opinion.
Well, if IGN says it's a 9.
Well, there's just such a disconnect between the user opinion and the IGN opinion. I don't know how to reconcile that.
So I remember specifically why I purchased Dark Cloud. And the first one. And
was it like, because I was like, dude, Dark Cloud!
No, it was the opposite. It was, I bought this thing.
Dark Cloud?
I played Zone of the Enders. I bought this thing. I played that game.
So fucking
and now, what other game will I play before Final Fantasy X comes out?
What other
and
game comes with a Metal Gear Solid demo in it?
Exactly. It's our cloud game. And so I bought that one, and I loved it. And I was like, oh, man, this is great. There's no load. Because even the first one, there was... there's no loading. You just run. They just make you run through a longer tunnel, which at the time was revolutionary.
Sure.
And now, and then the second one I also played. The second one also came out before 10 came out, but 10 was crazy delayed, if I recall correctly.
Probably.
And so I was like so sad that 10 was delayed, and I was like, oh man, my life's over. But then Dark Cloud 2 came out, and I was like, oh. And Dark Cloud 2, like, really, the only thing I remember about – I remember playing 1, but I remember looking at 2 because 2 was just gorgeous. I bet it still looks gorgeous.
It still does. And I think part of that is just our age at that time where it's like, you know, Dark Cloud came out in, like, 2000. So you're like, anything is great forever. And then 3 years later, you're a little bit more discerning and you're like, well, this actually looks good and there's good systems. And yeah,
I love this.
Let me smoke my bubble pipe.
I love the shit that you find while you're waiting for something else that ends up being better than the thing you're waiting for.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's my favorite. Anyway.
Jeff, I have a game that you could actually play between now and when you leave for your European cruise where you're going to go protest with the people in Turkey.
Yeah.
Gotta
get gas.
We've already talked about it off the air. You should play Bleed.
What's that?
I have played an indie game. Russell Anderson played an indie game.
Which medium?
Remember this one.
PC Master Race, of course. Just
step by step, okay? It's a PC indie game. But it's a game that's like, it's like Noi to Love 2 and Super Meat Boy and Contra had a baby. It's like a really fast-paced, side-scrolling shooter. It's called Bleed, B-L-E-E-D. It's $4.50 on Steam. It's one of the green light features. And I beat it in like 2 hours.
It's early access, Axel, right?
Is it? I thought it was full release.
Okay. Oh. I don't know.
I bought it. It looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, it's release. Okay. It's finished.
That makes it 2 green light games that I'm buying right now.
Yeah, I highly recommend this game. It's first of all because it's so cheap, and second of all because it's fun. It's also really, really hard.
I dig it.
Yeah, it's. I played on normal, and there are 2 difficulty settings above normal, and I don't know if I even want to go back and try them because it was hard.
Yeah,
but definitely. I mean, it's got some awesome like third wall humor, like the main character complaining. Well, I won't spoil it for you, but it's funny. So yeah, definitely worth the less than $5 you've got to pay for it.
Awesome. I'm getting that. I'm also getting Rogue Legacy right now.
Oh yeah, I heard good things about that.
Yeah.
Have you heard of guys? You guys heard of that?
I have.
No, I have not.
It's like a roguelike, but there's only 5 levels, and it's like a platformer roguelike, but it's not a real roguelike.
Has roguelike
get
elements.
Crazy about that roguelike, definition.
Roguelike Giant elements. Bomb spunked in my face roguelike. About this, so I was like, oh, I should probably check it out.
So, yeah, it's really cool, and I like it because, I mean, this is going to sound so crunchy granola, but I like it because the character can be gay, but it doesn't change anything about them at all.
I like that. That's what I like.
Homosexuality. That's one thing we actually didn't talk about in The Last of Us, but hey, not rehashing that.
Bill's gay, guys.
By the way.
Does it really matter?
That's my fan, my fan blog.
I don't think
no, it doesn't matter at all.
That's the whole point.
BT dubs.
Was he gay?
Since we're talking about indie games, I'm going to talk about Gunpoint. Have you guys heard of Gunpoint?
No.
No.
Gunpoint? Here's me selling you on Gunpoint. In Gunpoint, you have trousers that let you jump really high.
Sold.
And you can break through windows and kill guards. Gunpoint is a stealth game. And
every
level is you breaking into buildings and stealing documents. And you have 2 tools. You have trousers that let you jump really high and break through windows and or kill guards.
Are they called trousers?
They have a really funny name, and it has the word trouser in it.
Okay, good.
And you also have a rewire tool that lets you change electrical connections. So, like, you can make a light switch turn off an alarm, or like a light switch close a door. And that's all you have, and you have a bunch of levels, and it's like total emergent gameplay. Like, solve the puzzle however the hell you want. Get in, get out, get the documents, try not to get seen.
And this game was like made by one dude who's like a games journalist, right?
I don't know if he's a games journalist or not, but
or
he is
ex games journalist or something.
There is a ludonarrative dissonance achievement called simply acknowledge ludonarrative dissonance.
Okay.
And you just get it.
Did you?
That is beautiful.
I've seen some gameplay of this. I've watched some people playing it. Have you played the clay game that came out last year? The
Swapper?
No, the clay game. The Metal Gear Solid stealth action. Ninja.
Oh, stealth bastard?
No, the one from clay. The stealth ninja game.
Mark of the Ninja?
Yeah, Mark of the Ninja. Yeah.
Jamie.
Oh, yeah. We love that game. By we, I mean
we love that
me and all my other my alternate personalities, including including Gamby. He's like Bambi, but he's got nice games.
That game is okay.
It sounds like you're talking about that game, but not as good as Mark of the Ninja, so. I like Mark of the Ninja, so if you want something that's similar but not as good.
I should say
less open, more refined?
No, Mark of the Ninja is I would say less open than Gunpoint.
Okay.
Gunpoint gives you fewer tools, but it gives you more options, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm watching the demo right now. It definitely seems freer than Mark of the Ninja.
Mark of the Ninja is very like level design. Like, okay, you're going in this room. Maybe there's like two or three ways you could approach it, but you're in this room. You gotta get from like this point of the room to that point of the room. Gunpoint is like, okay, here's this building. You could come at it from any angle. Like, there's all these different floors. There's all these different ways you could get to where you're going. There's all these different potential outcomes. I would say that the number of possible outcomes of a level in Gunpoint is far greater than the number of possible outcomes from Mark of the Ninja.
So this is what I'm getting from what you're saying. Mm-hmm. This is like, much as we in these United States are post-race because we have a black president,
mm-hmm.
video games mm-hmm. are post-level design because of this game.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Yes. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Just nod and let him go with it.
Also, it's really funny.
Okay.
There are conversation trees that I think matter for what levels you get to play, although I'm not sure, and they're really funny. And I would definitely play this game.
Are you telling me that Gunpoint has a really shitty freaking healthcare system program built into it?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm telling you that
now
you
I'm in.
You can blame Obama for Gunpoint.
Thanks, Obama. Buy Gunpoint now.
No, it really is a great game. I mean, the levels do feel kind of playgroundy, but in an awesome way. And it just encourages you to be a badass. And
dare I buy three games in one night?
It's like
Gunpoint is $10 on Steam.
You should buy it.
But I just bought a $15 game, and then I bought a $5 game.
Listen, you have money,
Jamie.
And then it'll be 20, and then 30. So it'll be like 30. So that's still less than Animal Crossing, so I'm going to do it.
Oh, no, Jimmy. I noticed that you mentioned the Swapper before and maybe in some words you wrote at some point, and you're playing that. Are you not?
I'm not playing that because I'm saving it to play with the lady who, now that she's here, we're going to play it. But we like to play those games together because we're adorable. Uh-huh. So that's what we're going to do.
Did you play the Swapper, Griffin?
No, but I watched some video for it, and I feel like I've got enough out of it as I want.
Yeah. I'm not – it wasn't getting me. It wasn't sinking its claws into me. It was like, okay.
Because immediately I was like, yes. So maybe I can finish it, play through it, and then next week I'll talk to you guys about it.
Sure. Sell me more on just the initial concept of like everything that I've seen in the 20-minute playthrough where I was like, okay, this is the gameplay, and – the thing that hooks you is the really dumb story that, or not dumb story, but the really intentionally truncated story that they'll probably tell you more about that you won't actually learn more about later. Like,
yeah, I fall like,
for those. If that's what's hooking me, that's not what's hooking me.
I love those. It's like Lost. I will buy. See, I hated Lost. I hated it at the end. I hated it more than anything, really. But. I'll continue to buy games that have that hook. Like, here's some stuff. Here's an old rusty trap door.
But they often don't.
Who put it there?
They often don't pay off. Although
they don't pay off at all.
Some of my favorite anime do that, so I will say that I am a sucker for that too.
That's bad. Two words to put together.
What favorite anime? Yeah. You shut your mouth. You have a Spike Spiegel poster that you make love to every night or
whatever.
Something.
Whatever. I have transcended anime.
Are you post anime?
I've shed the mortal coils of anime. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I have. I've moved beyond anime. Yep.
I don't know.
Sorry.
I think most anime probably now is terrible. I haven't watched it in a while, but
here's
the secret.
Always been bad.
No.
There's one with giants. What's that one? There's like giants.
It doesn't
people going
matter.
Nuts about.
They're always.
Oh,
they're
I think
always
I've
about
actually
giants.
Been watching that thing that
nope.
you're talking about.
Axel. Axel has secretly outed himself
on.
As
what's
that guy who still is into anime.
I want to know about this.
My video drive is spooling up. Hold on.
It has giants in it?
There's giants, and they're like, they look weird. They have lots of teeth, right?
They're badass. They bite people.
They have lots of teeth.
They have lots of insert human-ish organ here.
Uh-oh. Okay. Okay. All right. Brace yourself for some Japanese. It's called Shingeki no Kyojin.
What does that mean?
I have no idea. But there are definitely giants, and they definitely bite people in half.
Can we convert this podcast?
But do they have lots of teeth? Like more teeth than normal?
Yeah, they have lots of teeth.
Can we convert this podcast to just all of us playing Xenogears together?
I was watching Xenosaga.
Xenogears
is one of my favorite games, Griffin.
Honestly, Xenogears is one of my favorite games too.
Yes,
but for the worst reasons.
Stop it! Don't beat yourself up about that. Unless they're like really stupid reasons.
Favorite games because there's a guy. He's a dog, but he pilots a ship. But there's also humans, and there's no explanation as to why he is a dog.
What are you talking about?
The pilot of the ship. He's a dog.
What
he's
the hell
a goddamn
are you talking
dog.
About?
No. He's talking about Xenogears.
Yeah.
What's
do you,
a dog
do you mean
pilot?
The guy on the Thames, who says we're men of the sea.
He's a dog.
I don't
remember way too much about this game.
He is.
No, I don't. He's a dog, and they never mentioned it. He's just a dog. Everyone else is a human, but he's a dog.
Don't
worry about it.
Are you talking about that worst part when you go into the sewers and there's like a bunch of rat people, and you're like, well, this is where the game kind of fell off.
No, the guy on the ship is a demi-human, I think. I don't know. They don't really explain it.
All right, call it what you will. He's a fucking dog.
The game has demi-humans in it.
It does, yeah. There is the willful suspension of disbelief of like, okay, this is a fantasy story, but yeah.
But I'm saying it's one of my favorite. That's the reason why that game really made it, I think, in the States.
I loved Wells. I loved, that was a weird slip, Xenogears because Jamie lent it to me. No, I love Xenogears because it was the first game that I played all the way through from start to finish and took notes on.
Oh, man, you have to.
Playing through to try and understand what was happening, I took notes and wrote character descriptions and was doing all these things as to try and understand what the fuck was happening.
Fucking awesome.
And then afterwards, I was like, this is dumb as fuck. But I also really, I liked the combat. Like, I liked how anime-y it was, where I was like, this is delightful and stupid and really, really just phantasmagoric, where everything is exploding in your face and dumb as shit, but you're just like, I'm okay with it because I'm 12.
How many other games are there with stories that span like 40,000 years?
I thought that was great.
Don't tell me that it's ill-advised. I played that game like 3 or 4 years ago, and I legitimately loved every second of it.
It was a great game where you're like, fuck, I should crap open a Bible. Crap the Bible.
I should go crap on a Bible. That's what I think whenever I play a Japanese game.
It's funny because they quote all this American shit, like the Soylent Factory, and I guess Japanese people don't know about that movie or something, or they just don't care that it's incredibly literal. So it's telegraphed so obviously if you're an adult. But I don't care. I love that game. I think it's brilliant.
I think it's a fantastic game. It's probably the second game, best game ever behind Google Play Music. Available for $10.69 a month. Unless you were an early subscriber, in which case it's $8.34 a month.
So. Xenogears is a fantastic game, but better than any of Xenogears could ever be is the music.
Oh God, yeah, it's so beautiful.
Music is awesome. Oh my God,
if you cannot argue that Xenogears has some of the best music in video games ever.
I've got my girlfriend. Sometimes she'll just go do 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 without, and then she'll be like, "Damn it,
you hypnotized me again."
Yes, that song is forever stuck in her head.
Oh man,
so I'm happy about that.
You guys remember first song? The first song from Chrono Cross, plays the intro.
That one.
Wait, which one are you talking about? Are you talking about Scars of Time?
Yes.
The one that plays when the book in the CG thing, the book is flipping open, and then like other stuff's happening.
Yes, the one that's like.
So funny, we bring this all up. In previous podcasts, as of like before, I was doing this with you guys, and we could have people locally like. I could plug in a device to the board and play music through it so everybody could hear. And I would do this thing where I would play like 30 seconds of a song from a game, and everybody would have to guess what game or song it is.
Mm.
And now this is the worst it has ever been, with Jeff fucking like humming this garbage memory. So,
dude, I guarantee you that not only do I have the notes right, but I'm in the right key. I promise you that. But I also sound hilariously bad.
Scars of Time is one of the best songs ever created for a video game.
Yes.
If that's what you're trying to hum, that's not the opening song. It's the world map song.
Oh, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
That one? Yeah, that's good stuff. We just lost Jamie, by the way. I'm going to throw him back in.
Okay. I got a cover here for me a second. I gotta grab a charger. Be right back.
Sure.
Okay.
So while he's gone, we should hold elections to replace him.
Right.
Who's gonna be the new head honcho?
I cut out and then I came back. Who are we replacing?
Griffin's left, so now we're all vying Lord of the Flies style for who's going to be in charge of the podcast.
Oh man. We all win.
Yes. Griffin was saying that Scars of Time is the overworld music when you're walking around on the map.
Which, right. Well, I want the now one in the beginning, the one that you were singing.
That's the one I like. But he, yeah, I like that one a lot. It's the one where it's like, do, 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 do. You remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Vaguely. I stopped playing that game when you turned into a cat because I was mad.
But then you go to the other world and it's like,
I know, but I was mad.
Do, do. Do 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 do. Very emotional.
You literally turn into a cat, and it's like, nope, you're no longer that other guy. You're a cat now. And when I was younger, I couldn't handle it. I was like, this is terrible. I have to stop playing this game forever.
If you can handle Jill shooting a doctor in the face, then you can handle being a cat for a little while.
That doctor was a bastard. Yeah, and he's gonna knife me. But I shot him in the face.
If you walked up to him,
did you walk into him?
We all.
I walked into him and I shot him in the face.
I surgically killed him. I made it quick.
You made like you took a scalpel and you killed him with a scalpel?
No, I very funny. I shot him right in the head. Clean kill.
Oh, I killed everyone in the room.
Fuck.
Including Ellie.
Wouldn't that
be cool if you could end the story right there? You just shot Ellie. Game over.
It'd be cool if you could die there and the story would just abruptly end. Although, maybe it would be violating their initial vision. I was kind of turning that back and forth in my head as to whether or not they should allow you to just die.
I definitely played that part of the game on easy because I suck at games.
We were talking about how they, for whatever reason, this is one gripe I do have with the game. They transplanted in the people from Uncharted that have the anti-headshot helmets on.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
What do you mean?
Where you shoot them in the head and their helmets pop off?
That's the best.
Well, no, it's worse than that because you get to the end and, like, I would wait for the guys to turn so that they were facing me and I would shoot them in the middle of their faces, and then all that would happen when I hit them in the middle of the face was that their helmet would pop off.
Yeah. Well, have you ever tried to shoot a police officer wearing, like, let's say a biker helmet? The exact same thing.
Yeah. Let me tell you, it's a very different result.
Well, it actually works with a smaller, like a yarmulke. The first thing that happens is the yarmulke comes off.
They tell you if you're going to play with guns, be sure to put a hat on and then you won't die. That's what Wayne LaPierre told me.
Or any face thing. You can put on a fake mustache, it'll work too. The mustache will just fly off.
Griffin, while you were gone, everything went to shit.
Yep.
Almost immediately, actually.
Two games have left the building.
Yeah. We don't talk about those anymore. We're adults. We talk about guns now. Is he here?
Guns and boobies.
No, I don't think he's back yet.
Okay.
Hey, guys, let's take a vote. Boobs?
Boobs or guns?
Boobs.
I vote
guns.
I vote boobs with guns on them. Like titty machine guns.
What was that movie that had...
Austin Powers.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Only the greatest movie ever made. Austin Powers is the best video game I've ever played.
Oh my god. I really want to play these games that I just bought. Maybe I'll play them while I talk to you.
You should instead play Chrono Cross.
How long is Gunpoint?
Gunpoint is like 4 hours, 5 hours.
Hey guys, it's short. I'm back.
Hey,
do you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Can we play what classic Square RPG will I play this summer instead of playing a new game?
Only if we can play what classic Square RPG have I played this summer.
What have you played this summer?
I don't know. But
we have to guess. That's
you go first. You go first, Jeff.
Final Fantasy V.
I will say the Brave Fencer Musashi, just for randomness.
That's what you're guessing? Really?
No. Let me try again.
Oh, fuck. I was going to say, because that's on my to-do list.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Fine. I'm keeping it.
No, I got a video. That's in the wings for the videos I have to make. But I got a better one. I have a way better one. Wait.
I have a guess, but I'm not sure if it's Square Enix, so please don't jump down my throat if it's not. Front Mission 3.
Oh, I love that game.
It's Square. Good choice, yeah.
That's a great game.
Okay, so that's my guess, but I guess it's not the one.
That's a funny thing you say that. Like, I've been having issues with that game where I don't actually remember if I did a video of it or if I dreamed a video of it.
I'm just going to tell you right now, that game is not quite as good as you remember.
You're right.
However, the internet part of it is still pretty cool, even though I don't want to play it.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's the best front mission because you can simulate battles and get loot from simulated battles.
I did not remember the game being so anime. Like, I remembered it being pretty anime, but I didn't remember it being so weird.
I don't remember it being anime. I mean, granted, I didn't play very much of this game. It was a Blockbuster rental, like, every 6 months for me.
Right, I played all the way through.
But I remember it. I remember being super serious. It's like, these are serious war machines.
These people have problems.
The beginning of the game is like every mech anime ever in the beginning, and it's really goofy and weird.
Remember that beautiful time as a child when anime might be the way the world works? Just might be. It lasts like all of 1 month when you're like 11, and you're like, this could be the way things are. And then that just dissipates.
I hate myself.
I modeled my adulthood on Gundam Seed.
Good choice.
Yeah, I want to replay that game. But what was it, Griffin?
What is what?
What's the game that you have already replayed this summer?
Dark Cloud 2. I don't know. I honestly forgot. Like, I've been playing a ton of games, but Dark Cloud 2 is what's taking my time up now for, like, and Pokemon Yellow.
Interesting.
What?
Yeah.
Pokemon Yellow fixed some of the red and blue glitches, but those games are kind of broken.
Pokemon Yellow is not Pokemon is not a good game. Like, if no. I mean that in the best way. Like, the patches that have been made to it are much needed. Like,
yeah,
you can only have 20 fucking things in your inventory, and there's also only 30 things in your box. You're like, I guess I gotta throw out all the everything, and nothing organizes in your backpack. You know, there's just so much, you know, hinky nonsense in that in those first three games where you're like, well, that's bad design, but you probably didn't expect it to go beyond this.
Yeah, I would say Pokemon Red and Blue, if you go back and replay them, they are not fun. People don't give that series enough credit for all the shit they added to it and all the shit that they've improved. Mm. I think each Pokemon game is pretty much better than the last.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I love all the new ones. I think the new ones are awesome.
But I was going to say, the trick question is, the game that I'm going to back to play this summer is The Bouncer.
Oh, my God. That game is awful. I played it on launch.
And that's because, that's because I've actually purchased it and replayed it a couple times over the past 2 years. And that's because the next tattoo I'm getting is the Cactar with the X sign over it.
Griffin, in the beginning of the game, does someone do a voiceover and say, "The Bouncer"?
The Bouncer. No, I don't think they say that, but the voice announcer for all the characters was like, "Sion, Bursad, Volt, Kruger, Kylifo." And then it's everybody who's ever been anything in like voice acting who's in that game. Like, it's like, you know. I don't know about Troy Baker, but I think that I know that Kai Lefo is Steve Bloom, which is 1999, fits right into his wheelhouse sort of thing. Or I guess like 2000, 2001 wheelhouse. But I think that Kruger and Sion are like big names in voice acting. But yeah,
I really could have sworn that someone goes, "The Bouncer." That's all I remember from that game.
Mm. No, you could be absolutely right, like right in the title screen.
Okay, good. You better check and find out.
I don't
remember this game. So right now, as you were talking, I'm watching on YouTube the 1 minute trailer for this game, and it is incredible. There's a cutaway scene of someone just typing on a keyboard, like to get you enticed.
It's the last Square game that was published by Square before Square Enix. It was the first PlayStation 2 game by Square that was trying to be something beyond just your standard RPG. And the dude has a jacket that has a cactar with an X mark over it, like a Ghostbuster symbol. So I'm going to the tattoo place to get that put on me.
There are literally no Final Fantasy enemies in it, though. Or like there might be. I think there are goblins, but they're just wolves.
Yeah. No. They're called goblins.
In the trailer, you're just beating up other people. You're just in a city just beating up people.
Yeah, little kid with short pants, you know, punching dudes.
Was that a bait?
You're a bouncer, and the club is wherever you are, and nobody's allowed in.
did they market that as like an RPG? Was it a bait and switch, or was it just like called an action game?
It was marketed as combining brawler action with RPG, you know, longevity. It was like it was like Square Enix trying to say, we're going to take the brawler franchise and take it to something else where you can upgrade your characters and have, you know, persistent levels and all these things that you can, like, trying to take the brawler and move it into an RPG territory where it's like...
So is it possible that this game inspired like Devil May Cry, or did they break new ground with upgradable characters?
No, because it fucking sucked.
Well, it was a terrible game. I played it through to the end.
Me too. It's garbage. It's absolutely garbage. And the upgrades that you make to your characters don't really mean a thing. It's like you upgrade their new moves.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. Sucks. Because as far as I can tell, Zell is twirling suckers around and then throwing them against walls. So I will play this game. I would pay $60 for this game.
It's also hella anime where, like, halfway through it, you find out that your, like, girlfriend is a robot girlfriend, and her, like, face, like, unfolds into a robot girlfriend face. Controlled by a fucking satellite out of a briefcase.
I remember the satellite in the briefcase, and I remember having to save your girlfriend from like a corporation.
It's one dude, and he's got like a chain that he ties his arm up with, and he's like, "I'm not going to fight you with my other arm."
I remember that.
And you fight him like 8 times. Yeah, it's like smart because you don't fight God; you just fight him like 8 times, and he just like keeps taking off clothing.
Griffin, have you played FF Legend for the Game Boy? You have, right?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
You fight God in that game.
You fight God in every goddamn game.
I legitimately still enjoy the original Final Fantasy Legend Game Boy games.
Yeah.
I think they're awesome.
They're very confusing, but very good.
Anyway, have you played
But you're also a Saga Frontier fan, Jeff. If I remember back to our middle school days.
Yes, I like Saga. Yeah, in general. I bought Unlimited Saga thinking I would like it.
Ugh.
Like 5 years after it came out.
Well, you know that the Legend games were just Saga games.
You mean the... Oh, yes, I do know that. Yeah, Legend was Saga 1, yes.
Yeah.
I downloaded a ROM hack of Saga 2 for the DS. Like a
I'm determining that the main character's name in the Bouncer is Sion. So yeah. Now I'd pay $100 for it.
Yeah, it's a bunch of rats with giant nutsacks. Dancing to Will.i.am music.
Sion just gave a shirtless man a nosebleed, and then he said, "I'm a bouncer. I make a living putting people in their place." That's what he said. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
Oh, no, that's fine. Griffin and continue. I were going off on a tangent about Saga games, which isn't really going to resonate with the one person who's listening to us.
No, and honestly, Jeff, I have no affiliation to Saga games I've been on this like this Hajj, this this religious journey to get to acquire and play through Saga Frontier 1 and 2 and not hate them. But I think I wasn't even able to take the first step.
I think I have Saga Frontier. I can lend it to you. I love that game. I think it's awesome.
I'm sure you're honestly. You're fine. I'm sure that's okay.
Have you not purchased it, or have you just played it and not enjoyed it?
Scion's wearing a dog collar. Continue.
He does. What's the bar name? It's like the stray dog or something. Some dumb as shit thing.
I think it's a FF reference, if I remember correctly.
What?
I've heard enough shit talked about the Saga games that they aren't for anybody or anyone.
Here's the coolest thing about Saga games, honestly, when you get down to it. You will be fighting with your character, and you can equip different weapons. You can equip a sword or a punch, basically, or like a gun, or you can use magic. And you'll be fighting, and in the middle of the battle, a little light bulb will come up over your character, and it'll be like, and you'll learn an ability in the middle of the battle. And then you can just use that ability in the battle.
That's pretty cool.
That's why that game's awesome.
In that battle only?
No, you just have it forever after that.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like a battle-specific ability. That would be really cool. That'd be cooler than whatever shit you're talking about.
No.
Stupid game.
No, it's I'm seriously, joking. That for me, like when I was playing it as a kid, that for me was enough. And like you can play as seven different characters, and they all have slightly different things going on. Some of them are better at some things than others, and they all have their own little mini kind of shitty narrative, but they're kind of cool. But the coolest thing is just sparking new moves in battle, and like the mystery and like the excitement of discovering a new move, and it's like pseudo random, but you can increase the chances of it. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
That sounds interesting. I feel like these games were always kind of under the radar.
Yes, they're very weird. They have a lot of very arcane systems. Like your character can die, but you can revive them by just using a normal cure on them, but they only they have these things called life points, which they only have seven of, and if they lose them all, they're dead forever.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of really arcane systems.
So
it
it's
also
a rogue.
Came out like not even right at the same time as Final Fantasy VII. So,
yes.
So most people are like, this is weird and not the same.
Huh. Yeah. It also has a really weird art style. Like, I'm not sure how to describe it, but you should watch a video of it. It's very odd. It's like... Do you know how you describe the first Saga Frontiers art style, Griffin?
No.
The characters look like they were molded out of like plastic or clay, but they're like 2D. It's really weird. Mm. You should check it out.
Okay.
That's incredible.
I love it.
Is it on PC?
No.
No.
Well, I could give you a perfectly legal backup that I made.
Speaking of perfectly legal backups,
Jeff, make air quotes.
Yes, Griffin.
Club Nintendo.
What happened?
What about it?
Oh, I was just getting us away from that. So, hey guys, do you use Club Nintendo? I was just bringing us to the Google Docs. Do you guys use Club Nintendo?
I do.
This is Adam Sandler impression here. And do you? The Club Nintendo?
I have like 2,000 points on Club Nintendo right now.
Jesus.
I have a problem.
What are you going to get with that?
Nothing is that great on there right now. That's not true. I've gotten the good stuff already.
Did you get the Game & Watch?
He got like cool action figures. He gets the best stuff. I get the shit. I get the fucking cloth. It's like, you want a piece of cloth? Here you go.
Do you get the calendar every goddamn year like I do, Jamie? Where you're like, great, next year's calendar. Sweet.
Exactly.
What am I going to do with that?
I'm logging into my
Club Nintendo. May as well be last year's calendar.
I'm going to tell you exactly what I got in Club Nintendo once it finally logs me in.
I do like the use the points to buy downloadable games.
That's cool.
I don't like that because I don't.
What the hell? That's the best part about it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I like that it exists, but it's not for me because I still have the original carts.
Okay.
I have 540 points. How do you have 2,000 points?
I'm going to tell you. Okay, I only have 1,910 points.
Well, that's not enough.
That's,
This is sick. I can get Star Fox 64 on my Wii U for 200 points. This is the best club ever.
I'm not even joking. No, I believe you. Awesome. The thing is,
I can play Wii games. I can play Wii downloadable games on my Wii U, correct?
Jamie doesn't actually believe you.
No, I totally believe him. I was going to say the reason this was a bad way to get away from perfectly legal backups, because that's my preferred method of experiencing old content that I already own.
To play the original, like
Jeff likes to.
What do you say?
To dig the ROM out of the thingy, out of the cart, archive it, and then play it on a computer disk.
Exactly.
Like, totally legal. Very smart. Awesome that somebody is doing that. Yes.
Exactly.
But not what Nintendo wants.
I never owned a 64. Well, I did own a 64 towards the very end of its life cycle, but I never owned a Star Fox. So,
really? You never had Star Fox 64? That game's awesome.
No, the reason why, when you guys were all being like, Zelda, 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 the reason why I was like, Zelda, stupid, Final Fantasy, is because I did not own an N64 at the time.
Mm.
I got it very late in the cycle, almost towards like the end of its life.
Jamie, if Majora's Mask hits 3DS, will you promise to play it?
I will.
Sure.
Yes. Griffin, you like it?
Oh, it's my favorite Zelda. Well, yes. Second favorite Zelda.
What's your favorite?
Minish Cap.
Interesting.
Hey,
you know what's 100 points more than my Star Fox 64? Is Nintendog's greeting cards. 300 points.
Were you going to say something, Axel? Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say that I will not play Zelda when it comes to the 3DS.
Griffin, what do you like best about Minish Cap? People love that game. I wonder why, though.
I think it's partly because I loved Link to the Past, which then meant I loved Ocarina of Time. But then I liked Majora's Mask more.
Mm.
So then when I played Minish Cap, I was in that same world that they put that the last Zelda that I really enjoyed was in. Like, it's that same sort of like chunky, cartoony, fun, like very vibrant world. There's a very simple mechanic of like you get big, you get small, two worlds, and then you know, very, very, it's okay, this may make me sound stupid because I am, but it's simple. Like it doesn't take a ton amount of time to get through. The puzzles are not extremely obtuse. It's a simpler Zelda game that harkens back to like the Link to the Past, the Ocarina of Time, the Majora's Mask, but it's also a lot of fun and has like this kind of dark side to it with the enemy in it, and it I don't know, like I loved it because of the art style, for it being on the Advance, how it looked. I liked your freaking duck hat that you wore.
That was awesome. That was truly awesome.
I liked that it wasn't full of pointless, dumbass quests of like, okay, you got this thing. Now it's time to go back to everything you've done before and get them all again because, hey, it's Zelda. Like, go ahead.
I was going to say, how did you feel about the Oracle games?
Didn't play them.
Oh, you got to play them. They're on 3DS.
But I hear that they're everything I don't like.
I don't know. I play Seasons. Seasons is cool because it's a little simpler than Ages. Ages is a little obtuse and a little arcane at times.
Okay.
Seasons has a rod that you can swing it and there's snow and then it turns into leaves. And then the world changes a little bit and it's awesome. I love Seasons. Seasons is probably one of my favorite handheld Zeldas.
I'm just afraid that if I get into Oracle of Ages, Oracle of Seasons, that it's like, well, now I'm in for a pound, in for a penny. Like, I gotta go all the way to do all that.
In my mind, there's nothing wrong with that, but maybe they're too complicated for you. You should watch a little bit of them.
It could be. You know, I've never really loved Zelda. I actually played for the first time Zelda last year and really loved the first Zelda. And then I went and played, you know, Zelda, the Minish Cap. And I was like, oh, god damn. Like, this is just so good. Like, it was like, you know, it was like, it's like playing, you know, Super Metroid, and then Metroid
Fusion,
like, and nothing in between. But years later, even though there's other games canonically in between, like, you know, they're both really good games designed, but very different. But also, they adhere to a lot of the original formulas that made them so good, but without getting stupid and crazy.
I will agree that Zelda has taken a turn. I have not enjoyed. Well, I still like the DS ones. I loved the stylus ones, but the ones on console I have felt have been pretty bad.
Sure, they tricked me with the latest one. Yeah, where at the beginning I fell in love with it, and then there was like the story just stopped.
Yep,
it's like no more story. Here you go. Now fight some goblins.
You're talking about Skyward Sword?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I will say that
I played that for about 2 hours and I couldn't get into it. Yeah, sorry.
The one thing...
No, I'm with you. I stopped at about probably six, but still, I don't know. What, Jeff?
I was going to say, I agree with you completely, Jamie. It was a bad game. The one thing that it did do better than any Zelda was have like organic interactions with the environment.
I will agree. I loved exploring in that game.
Yes, best exploration of any Zelda, in my opinion.
I love a little flying beetle.
I wish they gave you more locales to visit.
I wish they gave you more beetles, a variety of beetles,
and more people.
Yeah,
I did buy the Hyrule Historia, and I have that coffee table book.
That's awesome.
And I look at that and I'm like, I should play more Zelda games.
Yeah.
But then I'm maybe I shouldn't.
When is Wind Waker out on Wii U?
October.
Oh,
I don't know.
Launch window.
You bastard. You motherfucker.
Oh, man.
I'm going to buy Wind Waker. No shame.
That console making me feel like a sucker.
You're going to sell it tomorrow and then...
I'm not going to sell it. I'm not going to sell it because the second they come out with the Cat Mario, I'm going to be like, damn it, I would love to play Cat Mario, but I can't because I sold the Wii U for a...
Bob Marley poster.
Bob Marley poster.
Jamie says Mario all the time.
I know. My wife was actually asking me about why he says that. She was like, is it a New Jersey thing? Like, is it an East Coast thing? Because on this other podcast I listen to, they say that and they make fun of them. And I was like,
because he's a Jew. why don't you play some Marios?
I tried to tell her that we've talked about this before. It's not an unknown issue. It's just, you know, it's what it is.
It's like you can't stop it. You just can't stop it. It's like the family and the kid is gay and the dad's like, oh man, I wish my kid wasn't gay.
Right.
But he's okay with it. He just kind of ignores it.
No, I get it. It's like me with Bagel.
You're a monster, Griffin.
Right, I'm sorry. You guys did it to me.
I need to buy this Tokyo Jungle game.
Yes, you should. Good game.
Yeah.
Don't buy the mobile one though.
No.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the mobile one is good, but it's not the original game.
Yeah. It's Animal Crossing Tactics. PlayStation Plus.
It's on PlayStation Plus sale, isn't it? Right now.
I think so.
It might be.
It's either free or cheap is free, so you may as well
get it. Oh man. I have to remember to buy those games I was going to buy on PlayStation Plus. I'm going to get that game with the sand.
Journey.
Yes.
Jeff.
Halo.
As an ardent PlayStation Plus user, have you noticed the store has taken a weird change? Where before, if it was like, you're a PlayStation Plus person, and these are the games that are free this month, and you look at the games and you're like, well, I don't give a shit about five of the six, but here's this one that I'm into. And you click on it and it's like, would you like to purchase this? And you say, yes. And then you purchase it and it's like, you have this game forever now, but do you want to download it? And you're like, no. And then anytime you wanted to go back to that game because you're a PlayStation Plus user, you always have that game. But now, if you get onto PlayStation... And you get on there to download a PlayStation Plus title that is free for you. It's like, do you want to download this game to your hard drive? And you're like, do I have an option to say just purchase it? And it's like, no, only download.
Yeah.
And then I go to download it, and it's like, for realsies, you want to download this? And I'm like, I guess. And then I just have to cancel out of it. So I purchased
it. Yeah, but I think if you go back to it, it says purchased. Or do you mean that you can't choose to either buy or get it on PS Plus?
You cannot choose to buy it. You have to initiate a download to get it linked as a purchased item if it's a PlayStation Plus. So it's a really shitty workaround of Sony to try and get people to actually be downloading the games instead of just, you know, claiming they're downloaded.
Mm-hmm.
I was under the assumption, and I'm a new PlayStation Plus. I'm new to it. I was under the assumption that if I didn't download it right then I would never be able to get it again. And I, you know what I mean? Like, I was under the assumption that if I wanted that game, I should download it. Doesn't and I'll play it later, but it's when it's gone, it's gone. You can't re-download it ever again.
Well, maybe you can clear this up, Griffin, because I haven't been a supporter of PS Plus from day one. I only became a member earlier this year. So can you help us understand?
Yeah, sure. So for example, let me work in concrete here. So before, if I wanted to download Uncharted Golden Abyss, and that's free on PlayStation Plus for, you know, PlayStation users. It's like, this is free right now. As a PlayStation Plus person, you can have this. So I select the item, and I click on it, and then it says, would you like to purchase this? It costs $0. And then I click and say confirm, and then it says, okay, this has been purchased and added to your account. And it's like, now, would you like to download this? And I say, no, because I don't have a PlayStation Vita.
I see. But now
that was how it was. But now, currently, it takes this different tactic of, like, you pick this game that just came out, and you click on, you know, I would like to purchase this game right now, and then it's like, okay, now it's going. Like, it's like if you are clicking on this game, you can only play this game if you're a PlayStation Plus person. Would you like to continue? And you click yes, and then it initiates a download.
And can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question, Griff? So yes. If you download it, is it then displayed as purchased and you can re-download it later?
Yes.
Okay. So the only difference is that you can't just claim it and not download it now.
Correct.
You have to download it now.
And
if you don't,
you have to initiate a download and cancel the download now.
Ah.
Oh.
That's a little annoying, I guess.
It is a little annoying, but it's also like, yay, you know, free games. I didn't know if it was just me being stupid with the system.
No, that definitely is how it is now. I never knew it was the way it used to be.
At least you can still re-download them, which I'm happy about.
If that
was taken away, I'd be sad.
But even you know, I couldn't even do that, and I still thought it was a steal. Madbox.
It's
already paid for itself for me, and I've had it for a month. It's like
crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And it makes me so that I feel like if I get, well, I am going to get a PS4 at launch, but it makes me feel like, you know, I could even not get a game, and you know, they'll throw an indie my way, I'm sure, in first week or so for PS4. Well, I would hope.
It's basically like they're putting a little lube on before they do you, more or less. It's like, hey, take these free games. Oh, now you have to pay for internet.
But that's not how I like it.
No, that's very different. I think that it's like PlayStation Plus has already proven itself as a fantastic system and commodity and service.
That's
and
true.
Now they're like, hey, users who currently have PlayStation and are hooked into the ecosystem, you'll need this.
Yeah.
And you've had it already, and you may as well get into it. And people who haven't, well, so sorry, or welcome to the 20th century.
Yeah, it's like halfway between my cynicism and your value add argument. I think it's like a little bit of both. But yeah,
I mean, especially
I love it
for you. If I had a Vita, I'd be really happy with it.
Oh, dude, no, I love PlayStation Plus. I signed up for it for a year happily. So I'm just being a jerk about it. But yeah,
no, it's great. Totally. I've had it since day one. I've paid for it since day one. It is amazing. It is worth the one fucking gigabyte storage online is worth it. The midnight updates, like the fact that my PlayStation, like anybody who has ever said like, oh, PlayStation sucks because you have to go through this lengthy updates, like, well, fucking pay $15, you know, okay, pay $50 a year and then your PlayStation will update at 4 a.m. and you don't have to ever worry about that stuff. Also, gig of storage, also great for games, also avatars, I don't know.
No, it's great. I love turning it on. It's like, this is what I did when you were away.
Yeah.
So wait, I don't get this because I haven't explored the cloud stuff yet. Can you guys tell me what happens?
Just turn it on and it'll do all the updates for games, apps. It'll do it all. Just
system installs.
That's awesome. I gotta do that, guys.
Yeah, and then you turn it on, it's just ready to go.
I love PS Plus. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you hear about that and it's like, well, PlayStation has a new system update. Good luck. It's going to take 85 days to install because that's how PlayStation is. But then for me, it's like, okay, the next day, like it comes out on a Tuesday and I play the game. I turn my system on a Tuesday night or, you know, Wednesday afternoon or something. And it's like, well, it's already done. It's already here. And it's like, do you want to install? And I say yes. And then it takes 20 minutes.
I'm gonna use an awesome pun right now. That PlayStation update was the worst day of your life. For me, it was Tuesday.
Boom.
that was a Street Fighter pun.
They even have PSP stuff on there, right? I was browsing through it. I saw a PSP game. I was like, wow, I should dust that thing off.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
That's PlayStation Plus is the best fucking value for anything you pay for a subscription. And if they're going to say, you need this to play online games, like, if as long as nothing is changed about that service, then it's totally awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it's no Microsoft, you know, gold subscription, which is a bunch of bullshit. Like, it's good. It's a good value proposition.
Yeah, they managed to convert a crowd that rallied around hating paying for online into people who want to pay for online, and that's pretty amazing. Yeah,
it's very true. Very, very true.
Well, maybe mostly accidentally.
I couldn't help but reflect on the fact that Jeff was telling me what a great deal PlayStation Plus was after he spent 2 years bitching about Xbox Live.
Yeah, I mean, it's
well, that's because Xbox Live isn't a good value.
I paid for Xbox Live happily for about 3 years, and if you use it, it's good. If you don't, it's not worth it.
I mean, they're trying to work on it. They promised, what was it, Fable 3 and Halo 2, or Halo 3 and Fable 2
Assassin's
or something?
Assassin's Creed.
And then later they were like, well not
maybe,
right away.
Maybe later.
Yeah, at some point.
Well, I mean, the reason I liked Xbox Gold was not, I mean, they built in a lot of shit like in games like Forza, which is part of the reason I have an Xbox to begin with anyway, where like, you know, it would unlock functionality if you had a gold membership. But I think first and foremost, Xbox Live is really stable. Just works.
If you compare, I mean, online multiplayer on the PS3 and the Xbox 360, I mean, I guess you could say Live is a good value because it's better on 360.
It's more stable. There's less latency. There are more little kids who swear and use unbelievable racial slurs that they shouldn't know until they're at least 5 years older than they are. But
which is three.
Which is
toddlers play on Xbox Live.
Which is six. But
yeah,
I never had a problem with connectivity or lag or anything like that.
Yeah, but going into this next generation, not looking great.
For what?
For the value for Xbox Live.
No, whatever. I mean, PlayStation Plus is amazing. I get Battlefield 3 for free. I have no interest in playing that game, but I will because it's free.
Yes.
And it's like, it's awesome.
I got Dust 514, and that game sucks, but it's for free. It's fine. I'm happy.
Yeah.
People put their shit on the side of the road, and I take it.
Yeah.
That happens in real life.
I want free games more than I want online multiplayer, but that's just my personal preference.
I mean, the thing is, Xbox Live did a lot of amazing things early on in its life cycle. It did a lot of great things. It pushed the whole connectivity forward. It did a lot of amazing infrastructure things with achievements and demos and connectivity with user play, like user-to-user play. But it just kind of became a shell of itself by the end of it, you know? I think really it started when they discontinued One versus 100.
That people loved that. People went bananas for that.
I went bananas like, for one.
Griffin,
for one.
Were you telling me you one shit on One versus 100?
I upgraded to gold to play One versus 100, and I one shit on One versus 100.
What did you win?
I don't really know. Because it was early Xbox. Like, I was in One versus 100, I was playing the game, and I was successful in the game, but then it was like, you weren't successful enough, or maybe you were. Like, it was super confusing and super garbagey. And I don't know. It was like, it was early Xbox dumb stuff. And then Cliffy B got on there. He's like, hey, you should check out my game.
I think
bodybuilding.
Griffin wants some hot new kicks for his avatar.
Speaking of hot new kicks for my avatar.
Animal Crossing.
Do you want to talk about Animal Crossing, Jeff? I know you wrote on this.
I don't need to. I missed a day in my town and I felt bad. That's really the whole thing. I've missed more days since then and I still feel bad.
I've updated
Outsider Impressions, which is that you're all addicts and it's sad.
That's kind of the essence of my review that I'm midway writing right now.
Okay. I want to read it.
Jeff, multiple times I've been visiting Jeff. He like brings out his thing and he's like, I have to do this before this time. I have to do this. And then he's like, look at my haircut. He's like, you can choose what kind of haircut you have. I'm like, yeah, I did that in real life too. But I didn't have to do it at a specific time, and if I didn't do it, I felt bad about myself and the world.
See, I predicted that this would be the outcome for you. I just don't think it's the game for you, Jamie.
No, it's not.
But I'm ragging on it more than I'm ragging on it for comedic effect. It actually looks within that sad, crippling addiction is a magic of some sort.
Jamie,
like
it's
the antisocial
it's too...
version of showing up for raids on time in World of Warcraft.
No, Jamie, it's too late for you to hate yourself like the cool people hate themselves, because you can't do it like we can do it now. I'm sorry. Like, it's too far gone. Like, this afternoon, I was at my stepson's baseball for 7 hours from, you know, not 9 a.m. until freaking 5 in the afternoon. And then
I'm so sorry.
This afternoon, like, I'm in my room, or I'm in the bedroom, like, secretly skulking with my 3DS illuminating the bedroom, and my wife gets back from work and she's like, Griff, where are you? Where are you? I'm like, I'm in here. And she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I was just doing some stuff. And she's like, where are you? I'm like, I'm in the bedroom. And she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm digging up fossils and like selling shit. And she's like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm in the bedroom. I got stuff to do with Animal Crossing. And she's like, oh, okay. Griffin, and then 10 minutes later, I'm like, okay, I'm done. I'm fine. It's all taken care of. I don't need it. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Griffin, I've missed 2 days of fortune cookies and I feel really bad.
I missed a day of fortune cookies. So I'm like, should I even go on?
Can I tell you the worst part? In Europe, first of all, okay, this is how ass backwards Nintendo is. They're the only electronic I have whose charger does not support dual voltage.
No. Oh no.
Ooh.
So you're dead. You're gonna kill yourself on this boat. So, I feel so bad.
So I
should have said goodbye.
So I have to carefully budget my Animal Crossing time so as not to wear out my battery.
Turn the Wi-Fi off, first of all.
I know. Griffin, I need your advice. We need to have a special conversation later about this.
You need to...
Turn the Wi-Fi off. Turn the 3D off. Turn the
dude,
off.
Dude, I mean, you of all people should have your regimen built up by now where you're like, you know, I wake up in the morning, I dig the fossils, I run to the shop, I turn them in, And then I go to each other shop exactly at 10 o'clock, check them all out, see if there's anything, move out. No. Then I run around, do a quick hot lap around the town. Anybody new? No. Okay. Back to the house, turn the lights off, go to bed. That could be 20 minutes right there of your day.
Griffin, do you have your lean days and like your full days?
Yes, I do.
Dad, no.
Lean days? Oh my God.
I'm just going to go.
There is such a thing as a lean day in Animal Crossing where you have to make important decisions about which part of your town you neglect. Like, do you not water your flowers that day?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I think this isn't a game. I think this is a social experiment, a Japanese social experiment. They're trying to figure out how they can control Westerners. And you guys are.
I love that game so much.
It's really good.
It's so much fun.
I see it. I see the fun. I see it there. It's dangling in front of me. And I don't want to become.
Don't do it. Because the more that I've been playing it, the more and more that I've been playing it, the more like I get to that point where I'm like, okay, like I turn the system off to update it. So if I have to turn Animal Crossing on, it'll take me like 5 minutes. So I may as well just throw this cartridge away.
Here's the saddest thing about this. When I start school again, this may be the perfect game for me. Like, it may be the kind of thing that I can do for 20 minutes a day, feel like I'm getting my gaming in, feel like I'm like playing a role in some sort of fantasy world, and then have it nicely wrapped up in 20 minutes, and then, you know, that's it.
Yeah,
that's what I'm afraid of.
It's not a bad thing, though. And the worst thing that can happen to you if you fuck up in your town and you just don't do anything is you get a lot of weeds. And your villagers are like, where were you?
Yeah, you do.
I hope they're really passive aggressive.
They kind of are. They're like, where the hell were you?
We're glad that you're back, but...
Pretty much. Yeah, they just shame you a little bit. And there are no penalties at all.
Right. I'll be back in 5 seconds, guys.
The only penalty is your crippling guilt.
And exactly. Which is way more worse, where you're like, oh, man, that person, that stupid non-existent character is guilt-tripping me right now.
Oh, my God. Jessica has a mouse in her town called Limburg, and it's adorable.
I have a mouse in my town named Rizzo.
Oh, my God. I want a mouse.
And he is a Japanophile, and he always suggests awesome Japanese things for me to do.
Actually, you're going to buy Animal Crossing?
And he also wears panties around his nose.
He also hurts animals. That part you made up.
He also really likes Armored Core games.
Oh, my God.
So, Jeff, or whoever was touching this Google Doc, maybe you or Jamie, but I love it. Like, there's some of the most fun topics that I'm reading this, and I'm like, I just want to freaking talk. I just want to, yeah, I just highlight words and freaking talk.
Yeah.
Not necessarily things I agree with, like with the veracity of the initial statements, but they get me, my dander up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Me too. Let's do them.
Okay, let's do them.
Wait, before we go on, can we share the document with me, please? Because I now feel out of the loop.
Sure, I'll just copy paste the text to you, RQ.
Or
I'm gonna do it right now.
Do you mean it? Okay, I could.
Or you could just share it with him.
I could share it with him.
I'll just share it in my Gmail.
Yeah, go for it. I love it. I think it's a great idea. I am literally the only reason why I'm not sounding more enthused is because I just got hit with intense tireds, but I'm gonna power through them because I
power through it.
What are we talking about?
Intense hard liquor because I don't have any more subtle alcohol.
I wish I had
subtle alcohol.
I'm in the opposite situation.
I only have beer. Oh, wow.
My Google Doc has crashed and will not allow me to do anything. So,
What are we talking about? Talk about Don Matrick?
I'm sending it.
Yes. Roll. Okay, Jeff, you're highlighting it all?
Yes.
All right.
You guys push onward. You and Jamie can chat about it.
yeah.
What are we talking about?
What? Okay. So Don Matrick, that jovial son of a bee, has left Microsoft since last we talked. And, well, the rumor was he left, and in fact, he did leave. And now he's a part of Zynga. Actually, they're CEO.
Great place for him.
Yeah.
And
stay there.
Now, for Microsoft, it's looking like Steve Ballmer is overseeing that division until somebody else is chosen. And that name that has bubbled to the surface through unsupported facts is Julie Larson Green, who was ahead of a woman, and also
no,
she,
definite
yeah,
name.
She was a part
a
of Windows 8 peoples.
She was. You said she was a Windows 8 person.
Yep, she was a Windows 8 person.
Why does it say on this Google Doc that Axel can't play The Last of Us properly, and it frustrates me immensely?
That was Jamie.
Who the fuck wrote that?
That wasn't. It was Axel. He was trying to. Anyway, can I say my 2 cents about this real quick? So I think this is interesting, not because Don Matrick left and he's being replaced by a lady. I think this is interesting because, according to some reputable sources, which I cannot remember, this comes ahead of massive restructuring at Microsoft.
Yes.
And that's what's more interesting to me than just this one guy, because it's kind of like who's steering the Xbox One ship, you know?
Ooh, who knows?
Yeah.
Knows. Like not only in terms of this one guy leaving, but like it's weird ahead of a console to have a massive restructuring. I don't know.
Can we just say like what the fuck is going on over there?
Yeah.
In general? Like I don't understand that company right now. They're all over the place. So I agree, Jamie, very much. Do we know? I'm sorry,
is
go
this
going
to impact the console in any way?
I think it already has.
How can it not?
Yeah. I think for them to go in so hard on the DRM schemes and then back off, I mean, that's just a sign of how. I mean, you don't do that. That's like all over the place.
I mean, it's probably not as severe as some people as some people at Bank had to be like, oh, Don Matrick was behind all this, and you know, now that he's gone, the Xbox is wide open and he was blocking all this. Like it's obviously not that simple. But at the very least it's interesting that this is happening right now, and the rumor is he did have something lined up with someplace else before his departure here quite so immediately. And now, you know, he's gone kind of quite abruptly in a weird transitionary period, as you guys have pointed out.
Well, do you guys remember when right after the release of the Surface RT, Steven Sinofsky, which is like the guy responsible for the Windows 7 turnaround, just left? He was like, okay, I'm out.
Yeah.
Something's
going
on over there.
Yeah. That's not good. I mean, like, isn't the point of these things to keep people on? I don't know.
I think that it's not unheard of, and it's pretty common for talent to leave like that, but something does seem to be going on over there. I don't know what is happening. I don't know if there's like a big management issue or what, but something's up with Microsoft, and it's really showing through with all their products, I think.
Right.
I think they've been directionless with the Xbox for a long time, and they've been getting called on it at E3. But I think that they just had such a huge market advantage in the U.S. that it didn't really matter. And
I feel like they're...
Yeah, well said, Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, definitely. I feel like in other areas of the company, and in games too, they seem to be... Someone on the inside of the company has an idea of what people want. And he's like really sure about it. He's like, I really think that in the next Nokia Lumia phone, the next Windows phone, I think what people really want, instead of apps, is a 41 megapixel camera. That's what people need in their phones. And then that one guy convinces everyone, and they're like, yes. And then someone's like, what we really need in the next Xbox is for it to be a football-centric device. Just football. It's made out of footballs. and then they convince everyone, and they're
you
like, yes,
are the football.
And then like, and then someone else is like, hey, you know what worked really well 5 years ago when people were talking about it? The cloud.
Right. We can use the cloud to deliver football faster than ever.
Okay, well, sorry to... I mean, the cloud is an easy shit on point. Like, I think that it that is... That applies to a larger problem at Microsoft. Like, the cloud is a cool thing that they're doing, but the problem is they have yet to articulate it as to what the cloud actually is. And yes, the developers who know are saying what the cloud is. And I think we talked about this before, but I can't really remember.
You touched on it, yeah.
But, you know, the cloud is a thing, and it's a good thing. It's just not being marketed well by Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agreed. So I feel like they come up with cool ideas and then they kind of drop the ball.
I will say
they kind of let it kind of fizzle out.
I will say that Sony does this too, though. Sony did this with the friggin' PlayStation Move. They're like, hey, here's our awesome Move controller, or our awesome motion controller. Well, I know. That's way better than
awesome,
you know,
is a very... very generous word to describe the Move controller.
I didn't buy it, so I have no interest in it. But they're like, hey, here's this product that we're investing all this money into, and it's way better than that Wiimote. Oh, we forgot it. It's a thing. Hey, here's
this.
There
was a cool Echo Chrome game that I could never play because it required it, but I didn't buy it.
Hey, here's this Vita console. What Vita console? I don't know what you're talking about.
It's strong now. It's strong because we say so.
Yep. Wake up, club.
Griffin, oh, you don't have a Vita. I was thinking if any of you guys had a Vita, it'd be Griffin.
It will be. It will be.
I have a Vita. If you get one,
I have the whole library.
Right? It's for free to
because
us.
Of my but PlayStation Plus account, yeah.
If that, why is that thing $250? Why?
It's $200 in Japan.
It's a rough situation because you hear reports of like Sony is making a $2,000 profit on each Vita sold, where you're like, you know, it's like each Vita cost 12 cents to make. And you're like, wow, really? And then other reports are like, they're down $300 a device. And it's like, oh, well. But I mean, if the sales, there is truth in the sales. And it's like, once that thing gets to a $199 price point, like an under 200, people will buy it. Like you put that under 200 and you put it to, you know, you drop it down to 175. That's when it starts freaking making waves. But go get it, Jeff. Sorry, I'll back off.
I was going to say, I think that people have been claiming for a price cut for this, for the Wii U. I think the first rule is you don't cut your price before you have something to get people to go out and buy it at the same time. Like they need. Like, for me, Gravity Rush is that game, but not for most people. But, like, they need their title, like, be it Killzone Mercenary or whatever the hell. They're like, okay, hey, guess what, guys? Killzone Mercenary is coming out next week, and the PS Vita costs $200 now.
Right. And so also from a business side of it, it's like you don't devalue your brand that early on in its life cycle. Right. It's business 101. Like, you cannot say, because we're having a bad year, we cut our prices immediately. Like that destroys your brand. So you weather the storm, you push it out longer. Axel, I'm sure you have some insight on this, but but like it's like if you're not doing well, but there's no reason, like if you're not going to make any money on it except for what you're going to make directly through your sales, you may as well wait it out until a good back catalog is built up.
I think their American strategy is going to be keep mining the niche markets, you know, push out the indie games. They're probably dirt cheap to make.
Ooh, I got a good follow up here, Jeff. Remind me after Axel says his piece and you do.
Sure. Bring over the weird, you know, Japanese boob touching games or whatever. Although that's actually 3DS. But, you know, bring over the, you know, whatever, Ray Plays or whatever. You know,
how much is a Vita again?
$250.
$250.
Huh.
I think they're gonna keep the price where it is because I think the people who are going to buy a Vita right now are going to be okay paying $250 for it.
But guys, so So Griffin said is very true in terms of keeping the brand value high. But what about 3DS? They cut the price so soon. They even apologized and gave us all those free games, and now that system is doing well.
Yes, but
Sony doesn't make Mario.
Yes, but yeah, exactly. Go ahead, Nintendo is the greatest first party company ever. Yeah. Sony is not the greatest first party company ever. Like Nintendo very will true. Make their profit on their games. Sony will not make their profit on their games.
Yeah.
Very true. Very true.
I think Axel should jump in.
Yeah.
This is just pure microeconomics.
Business time.
Yeah.
We should have a little like chiptune segue.
You got business.
yeah, it's just pure microeconomics. It matters how much it costs them to make them. I mean, if they're operating on a thin margin right now, they might not want to reduce the price, but, it has to do with a concept that those who have been to business school will be familiar with called the price elasticity of demand, which means when you change the price, how much of a swing do you get in sales? So if you raise the price $50, how many less do you sell versus if you drop the price by $50, how many more do you sell? Sony is a very sophisticated company. They probably have people working on this question right now. But I don't know. I think it probably does. I mean, how much is a 3DS right now?
For the cheapest model is $130. It went way down.
Wow.
The other one is $190, I think.
That's so the other thing, because they're not competing. Right. They're not competing.
And 3DS what came out at what, $250?
Yes.
Okay. So, I think the argument that they have to keep prices high to keep their brand positioned in the marketplace against their competitor is, I don't know if that's right. They're competing with Nintendo, who is undercutting them by a lot, by half basically. And right now the case for somebody who's looking to buy a handheld is, well, okay, do I buy this one thing that's half the price and has more good games, or do I buy this kind of weird and complicated thing that's double the price and doesn't have as many games? I mean, the problem is number one, the price, and number two, the library. They need, if they're going to charge double for the console, they need to make a very clear value proposition to the marketplace.
There are two thumbsticks, Axel.
Here's what I think the value, here's what I think the value proposition is. I think because they cut the price by 500 yen or whatever, 5,000 yen rather, in Japan. Here's what I think the value proposition is.
Hey, just Griff here. Sorry about the abrupt cut. We'll never know Jeff's thoughts on what the Vita is. Actually, it won't be too difficult because we'll just do another podcast sometime and we can touch up on this. I apologize. There was a little technical error that caused the last half hour or so to be lost to the video game ether or podcast ether. So no worries. It wasn't probably important anyway. Or we'll just rehash it next week or whenever the next time we do this thing. So thanks for listening. Bye.